We're a little short of a gavel.
The chair.
Yeah.
Some days you just have to make do. Joe, we've waited, we needed an audience, thank you for showing up. Good morning, all. I'd like to call the meeting to order, and would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much.
Happy Veterans Day.
Harvest is done.
I spent 4 years in the Air Force.
Are there, is that considered military?
That was low.
Yeah, my dad was a Marine.
Ask them if they want to get from here to Europe, how they're going to do that, right?
I spent 4 years in the military.
Yes, let's not pick on the veteran. Yeah. Today's their day. I'm a veteran.
I guess you're a Marine.
All right. Any additions or corrections to the minutes of September 2007? Hearing none, the stand is printed. Anyone in the audience like to discuss any matter that's not on the agenda? Hearing none, thank you. Financial report.
You have a letter dated October 26th from me on September 27th, 2017 revised statements referenced. In item 3, it says that in the third line, expense A, red number, indicates the same as i.e. an expense is less than budget. That should be changed to black. The word red should be changed to black. And it's my mistake, but it's a good example, actually. The September statements that are in the packet were the original or the older statements, not my revised ones. So if you look at them, you can see the examples of where the income and expense summary statement and the detailed statement do not agree. And this is why we've moved to a full accrual basis, and the October statements do in fact agree. So if there are any questions about the September statements, I'm happy to answer them. If there's any questions about the October statements, I'll go over them briefly. The summary, income and expense statement 2017, the summary, you'll notice that the total income is $1,592,050. And on the detail, I think it's 052. That's a rounding error in the sense that it's adding the actual numbers up, and the pennies are not, we do not include pennies on here, but the actual data in the worksheets is in pennies. So that's, and there will always be a minor dollar or two difference. If it's much more than that, then there's something else going on.
Could you tell me where you are?
I'm on the page that says income and expense statement 2017, and it's October, year to date October. Looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the October one. There's one for September.
Right. Yeah. Right. But the totals on here do agree with the detail. And I think the important aspects of this are that in the month of October, we spent $133,000 more than we took in, and that's basically because under the accrual system, we recognize the majority of our income when it's due, so it's in prior months. But overall, in total, we have spent $1,061,000. We've earned $1,592,000, and so we're ahead of the game by almost $530,000. On the accounts receivable, which is the next page, we're going to have, I would like to bring to the board at the January meeting a list of all of the people who owe us money. We would do that in a fashion that would not identify anyone. In other words, it would be account 1, 2, 3. We would just number the accounts, but we would have all the information there so that the board can know how long people have owed us money, what we've done, have we put a lien against them, how much of it is our fees that they owe us, how much of it is interest, etc. And I'd like to go through that exercise, and then the board can decide if they find that exercise useful. I would suggest we do it like once a year, and then we can, if it's then important to know who number 14 is, we can go into executive session and discuss number 14 in greater detail. At least I assume we have to do that.
So Lee, of the 92,000 that's passed, 120 plus days past due, how many people does that represent? Do you know, okay, or Lee?
We just stepped out, so I'm sure she can answer that question when you come down.
I think it's around 20 people. The people that never pay.
And I believe that the majority of the 91,000, I want to look at the way this is broken down, because 120 days is only 4 months. And I think we ought to go to a system where we've got those people who owe us money for a year, those people who owe us money between 3 and 5 years, so you get a better feel for it. I think a lot of these accounts are old, have owed us money for quite some time. And Lee,
yes,
do you know how many people owe us money?
Total
in the accounts receivable, approximately?
Less than 200, maybe 100.
Okay.
That's a
maybe. All right. We'll have a list at the January, at the next meeting, we'll have a list of 1 through whatever that number is, and you'll be able to then see how much of that is relatively current accounts receivable and how much of it is long-term accounts receivable.
Do we have people in the long term that just refuse to pay, period?
Yes, I don't know.
We have liens against properties.
I think we have a letter in here from one person who's owed us money for a while asking us to, for some degree of forgiveness.
Those aside, there are a couple of people that own multiple lots, and they don't believe they should be paying for one of the lots that they never use. So we've had a long-standing lien against the property. Tom?
Yeah, I think my question got answered. All the liens are included within this 92K, right?
Yes, this is a summary of all the money everybody owes us.
Including liens?
Yes.
Yeah, so some of the liens are fairly substantial. Okay.
The next statement is the statement of cash flow, and our net income is minus $133,000. If you add in then the changes in receivables and payables, the total net activity is minus almost $147,000. But we began the period with $1,300,000 of cash, and we end the end of October with $1,157,000 in cash. And the next page is the detail of the expenses, and again, the totals on this will check back with the $2 minor variance back to the summary. And if anybody has any questions about the detail,
I'm not sure I can answer it, but I'm sure that, Dave or Lee could answer any questions about the details.
Questions or comments? Tom?
The only thing I noticed was up in the home and lot fees, you know, you put the E&I line items in blue, you shaded them blue.
Yes.
So I was expecting to see a home and lot fees divided between operating and E&I and have a blue line there. That's all.
They all got in. They're all in one. I should have done that.
Well, I'm not. I don't necessarily need to have that discussion here, but I have some. I have a difference of opinion about that, about the splitting of that income out, doing it that way.
That's fine.
And so we can have a discussion of that. But
I just thought that the whole sheet should be consistent. If the blue were the E&I items, it should be blue.
Is there, what's the reason why we break them out?
Why we broke out E&I?
Yeah.
Because that's, there was a separate division for E&I in the budget, and it was causing me all kinds of grief. And so we've collapsed it. I'm not sure that that's the correct way to handle it from an accounting standpoint. That's why, as you'll see in the budget, I'm suggesting we hire someone who knows.
Yeah, I see that.
So, but I wanted to provide it for historical purposes and for people who were concerned about knowing about the E&I budget. So it's sort of a eliminating the E&I budget without eliminating it completely.
Seems to me that it makes more sense to keep combine the two. Yeah, just from an ease of being able to understand what's really happening. I don't know. Okay. It's just my point of view.
Okay. Tom?
Just, this kind of goes back a few years when the Long Range Committee started. And part of our objectives or goals for the Long Range Planning Committee, one of them was that we keep the budgets separated between operating and capital improvement accounts so that we could easily see the capital improvement expenses. But all of that, and it's still in the objectives that you'll see today in the Long Range Planning Committee charts. But if that's the direction we want to go, that's fine. But that, we just always thought that we should have the visibility between the operating and the capital improvement accounts. And that's why it all started.
I have a question. Sure. It's a small amount, but I was wondering what the project wages are. I don't know what that is. It's under the general expenses.
That was for Chris Morris when he was assistant project manager. We thought we'd be using him more than we did.
But we're still using him.
We are.
Is the question answered?
I guess so. I think so. And then I have a question about the bills we paid.
Go ahead.
So, why is our mortgage, is it different every month, what the amount we pay? Because whatever we show in September is different than what we show in October. Just by a little bit, but I just was curious.
So I have to break out the interest in the loan principal. So the loan mortgage is $1,267, but $600 goes to principal and $600 goes in liability under interest. And liability is not shown there.
But then wouldn't it be the same every month for the actual mortgage?
It is the same for the mortgage, but the principal and or the interest changes because it's gone down. It goes down each month.
Apparently what we're doing is we're splitting and accounting for the principal payment on one account and the interest on a different account. And so both of the principal payment is going to be the same, but the interest payment is going to be different. And that's a good question, and we should we'll have to figure out a way to make it clearer.
It's clearer on the bills paid.
That's where I'm looking.
Yeah.
But they show different amounts in each month. That's all for the September mortgage. That's why I asked the question.
Oh.
But maybe.
I know why. It's because my payment was lost and I had a late payment. I see what you're asking.
Oh, in August?
Yes.
Or the September? Okay. All right.
Oh, okay.
But the other still does hold true.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead. That's it for the financials, unless there are other questions.
Are there any questions? Comments?
And I would appreciate, after you've had a chance to look at this, if you have any questions, any suggestions for how to better display this data, let me know or let Lee know, because again, this continues to be a work in progress. And the whole thing about a capital budget is a work in progress, and so it's.
Okay. Thank you. 2018 budget.
There's both a summary page, and I think if you're looking at it on your computer, I think the summary page is after the detailed page.
After the what?
After you have the,
yes,
the detail page, and then there is a summary page.
Right.
It looks something like
it's,
this.
It's page 20.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm using a printed.
Okay.
The important changes are that there is no change or proposed in this proposed budget, there would be no change in fees for 2018 from 2017. So all of the fees would remain the same. If we come down to metered water, you'll notice that our estimated actual is 15,000 and our draft budget is 10, and that's, we're just being conservative. Who knows where metered water is going to go over in the future. Most of the other numbers are in line with either the past year budget or the year-end estimate. If you come down to the carryover, we're estimating to be $995,000, almost $1 million from this year into next year. And that produces total income of almost $2.6 million. You can see the summary of all of the expenditures, and we can go to the detail and look at those. That produces a total expense of almost $1,200,000. There is a balancing number then that is the contingency reserve, which is the mathematical difference between the budgeted total expenses and the anticipated total income, so that expenses and the reserve are equal to the income. And down below that are projected, as a projected budget for the project, but since that will be presumably fully reimbursed, it's not a drain on our budget. It may be a drain on our cash flow, depending on how the timing of when we have to pay the contractor, when the USDA pays us. So it, from month to month, there could be a cash flow issue. But presuming that all or a vast majority of those expenses will in fact be reimbursed by the USDA, it has no net impact on our budget. And then if we go to the detail, which is the very long page.
So, Lee,
yes,
if we go back to the carryover capital improvement account that you're showing, you know, the $995,000, almost $1 million at the end of 18. Now that doesn't include any prior carryovers, correct?
Yes, it's the sum of all carryovers since literally the beginning of time.
Oh, okay. So it is inclusive of everything prior to 2017.
Correct.
Okay. So on that line item, and just to clarify one more time, the $317,000 September year-to-date would include carryover from 16, 15, 14, if there were carryover.
Yes, and if you'll notice, that number is fixed. You correct me if I'm wrong. At the end of the year, we will do a December 31st year-end statement. And that statement will have actual income, actual expense, and a net difference. That net difference is then added to whatever the carryover was from the prior year, and that becomes the carryover into, in this example, 2018.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that I want, one of the first things I'd ask the CPA, if we decide we want to do that, is to confirm that that number is correct. Because what I just said was, we take the number from last year as gospel, and add a number that we know is correct, and we get the mathematical sum of those two, but we don't ever actually confirm that that prior year number was correct. And that goes back, if there was a mistake made 20 years ago, it's still in there, is what I'm trying to say. And there is a way to confirm or to recalculate that based on our December year-end statements, with somebody who knows a little bit more about accounting than I do, can do that. And so we can confirm that number, and then we can move forward with more confidence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Before we leave, Lee, the initial page, I want to make sure the board is very clear and understands that there's no rate increase. Use the word fee. There's no rate increase built into the budget, correct?
That is correct. Now, individuals will, of course, as they get meters, as they go from unmetered to metered, or they connect a home that they're building to the system, individuals will change because of the circumstances they're in. But if the rate for a metered house will be the same next year as it was this year for an unimproved lot, all of the various aspects of it would remain unchanged.
Okay. I'd like to discuss this matter. Would this be the time in your presentation to do so?
Sure, I think so.
Speaking for myself, I am bitterly opposed to a zero rate increase, which is no surprise to you. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. We did that in 2010 and 2011, and I'd offer to you, we're probably still trying to catch up to the fact that for 2 years there was no rate increase, and all the expenses incurred by the water company had to be paid on monies of the 2009 rate. And I would offer to you that a small rate increase is better than a no rate increase. And I believe strongly that we should put in a rate increase at a minimum of somewhere between 2 to 3% or 2.5% to at least cover the cost of living increases. We have expenses that go up. I mean, we pay for, because we're not enacting a rate increase doesn't mean that we're going to pay less for goods and services we have to purchase during the coming calendar year. So before the proposed budget is accepted, I'd like to hear from the board your feelings about a rate increase or, as proposed, a no rate increase. Yes.
If I may comment on that. If you'll, just as a matter of looking, if you're looking at the summary page, if you look at the year-end estimate column, which is the middle column, and if you go down to the bottom, you will see that our grand total expenses that were, and that's estimated, the next 2 months are estimated, would be $920,000 rounding. Our income would be $1,915,000. So we are going to collect from our members and various other sources almost $1 million more than we're going to spend in the current year. And that has to do with the way the budget was put together. So that's the primary reason why I was recommending that we not change it, because we have $1 million. In other words, if our expenses went up this year by $200,000, next year went up by $200,000, and everything else remained the same, we would still have almost $800,000 more in income next year than expense. And since we're rapidly approaching the point in which all of our members are going to be on meters, and we have to look at completely restructuring our rates for the time when everybody will be on meters, that's really the rationale that I used in making this recommendation. I'm not, you know, your position is well taken, but I'm just trying to explain it from a factual standpoint, the numbers, that's all.
Okay. Tom?
Yeah, just a few comments. You know, over the last year in our meetings, including the annual meeting in June, you know, part of the point that we made as far as any discussion regarding future rate structures and rates was the fact that we were going to try to hold everything in check with you know, the new loan coming in and the loan surcharges that will be implemented. So knowing all that's going to happen, and those will be added to their rates once we start paying on the loan, and the fact that our contingency reserve is growing at the beginning of the year from $1 million to $1.4 million at the end of next year projected, I think that's what Lee is looking at. That's my impression.
Okay.
And it kind of agrees with, you know, what we said as far as trying to really scrutinize our costs. You scrutinize your costs, you don't need as much income. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the same time, we're increasing our reserves.
So Bob, I'm not sure I understand your concern in not raising the rates, particularly when we have, you know, over $1 million in reserve currently.
Well, there's a proposal that we'll get to in a few minutes that will address that reserve. Initially, I call it a surplus. And there's at least one idea on how to spend it down. Not all in one year, by the way. So I looked at that proposal, were to go through the board, and that's in one sentence, that we pick up the cost for homeowners that were mandating to move their service from the rear of their lot to the front of their lot. In lieu of that, I still don't mind that, and I recall the presentation of last June, and I cringed a little bit because I don't like projecting there won't be any increases based upon the experience we had when we didn't do it. And if we learned anything from that history, it was don't do that. Don't have years without increases. If their increase were to be, and the smallest increase we've had was 3 years ago, and that was 2%. In 2017, it was 3.5. 2016, it was 10. And I think that the 10, and with, and combined with the current year, is what's beefed up that reserve that you speak of. But I see us spending down some of that reserve. And that's a call of the board. The board may not see it the same way I do, and that wouldn't. And that's fine. But I feel that when you look at our cash flow, the fact that we're looking at the reserve to spend it and at least or close to between somewhere around $650,000, that I would still lobby for a rate increase, even if it's minimal. In addition, and the budget already shows that there are salary increases going this year and our cost of doing business will increase, whether we increase our rates or not. Now, that would call us upon that all of the increases would then come out of reserves, if I understand the thought process correctly here. Joe?
One time we had a discussion with regard to how much the reserves were going to be, and the discussion was that we really hadn't gone into a major effort to realize what obligation we might have to the reserves as such. So I understand what you're doing is you're spending down some of that undefined reserves as such, which would be hard to recover if we needed to. Because we were talking about getting a consultant possibly and going through the reserve process. And so if you're spending that down, I feel that you may have to reconstitute it again.
But Andy, that was my thought process.
Well, where in the agenda should we have the discussion about what you're thinking? Is that an executive session?
No, we can do it now.
I think we need to do it now, so it's in the context of the overall budget.
The board agree with that?
Mm.
Okay. You have a memo that I wrote. In fact, there are two of them. And one has to do with the discussion. This is listed under item D, discussion of shareholder hookup costs. And under the manager's report on the service lateral program, as you know, we are mandating a fixed number of homeowners to move their water service from the rear of their property to the front. And the numbers that I received from Dave and that he got from John Pedry is that the cost for that is going to be approximately $645,000, which tags out to about $1,350 per household on the affected households. Now, there'll be some that cost more than others, and I understand that. I'm just talking about an average. But looking at the $645,000, of work that we are mandating, my position is that the water company should pay for that, whether it's to pay it through a contractual service done ahead of time or to reimburse the homeowner after the work is done. Now, become our policy, we would not expend all the money during the next calendar year. This is as the service is moved. Now there's some other movements in the pipeline, so to speak, no pun, where if you have a meter, as I do, then it may have to be moved on the property, on my property, to accommodate what the water company wants to do with my next door neighbor, and it's called twinning, as I recall, right? And that's an expense the water company would incur. They're moving their equipment, not mine. But were I to have a rear service lot, or rear service on the lot, and I have to move it out, and I'm told by the water company to continue your service to receive water, you have to pay for and thus move the connection out to the utility right away. I'm told in one sense, well, that's part of doing business, and matters like that are on the homeowner. Our obligation, I am told, ends with what is known as the lateral. That's the pipe that comes out of the utility right away into the meter box, and we put in the meter that the homeowner either pays for or the grant or the loan pays for. And from the meter to the home, it's the expense of the homeowner. Well, my position is if we're mandating the homeowner to make the change, then the financial burden for that should lie with us. We're requiring the homeowner. Homeowner's not asking for anything. We're requiring the homeowner to move. In so doing, there are a fixed number of them, and there's 700 and something, if I remember the number correctly. And the cost would be covered in some system we all agree upon. Would be recovered by the water company would pay for all the costs, whether we pay it upfront or we pay on a reimbursement process. And the only thing I'm sure of is that while it'll come out of the reserves, it won't come out in 1 year. It'll come out over a 2 year period at a minimum. Now, during that time, if half of it came out in 2018, half the $645,000, you can do the math, that's $315,000 or $320,000. Can the reserves afford that expenditure and still remain healthy, and at the same time we have no rate increase? So our cash flow is going to remain the same this year while we have that identified expenditure increasing. And a similar increase would be applied in 2019. And once that two-year period is done, I am sure that all the meters will be installed system-wide. In addition to that, all of the backyard services will be moved out to the front of the property. So if we're willing to incorporate, if the board agrees that on a policy to that we pay the expense, whether we pay beforehand and our contractor does the work, or contractors, or we reimburse the homeowner after the homeowner has selected a local contractor that we tacitly approve of, if you will, and they use our specs to accomplish the task of moving the service from the rear to the front, and we pay for that, and there's no rate increase, can we then afford a zero rate increase? And if we can't, then we should put one in place. And if it's to mirror some of the expenditures that we're going to authorize, it ought to cover that. Now, this presupposes that the idea that I have, you agree with it, and we're going to move on it. And it's not something we have to do this morning, I'm going to add.
How about the people that already paid that have their meters?
Pay them.
Oh.
But what if you don't have, like, receipts? Or
well, that's up to the homeowner. You know, there's a very, very predictable, and that's one of them, what-ifs. And I, and we have history on that. And if you're one of them, and it was 7 or 8 years ago, we have the history on it. And if the plumber is still in business, he provides you with a receipt for the work he did, and we pay it. There can't be that many of them, quite frankly.
Several hundred.
Well, I don't know exactly how many. I haven't backtrailed it that far to count it. Right now, I'm concentrating on the homeowners that we're compelling to. And we could probably use the same argument for the people that moved them by themselves and when they were not so compelled. And I think in the spirit of the fact that there's some things we ought to pay for, that's one of them.
I have one concern. If we pay and put in the line, then in essence we own it. So if anything ever happens to it in the future, the water company is responsible to make repairs or replace or whatever. But then it's only a selected few. Other people have a problem. And we're not going to do it.
I think a simple way to solve that is to do a hold harmless. The first year of the installation, the water company or our contractor's on the hook. But after that, it becomes the homeowner's responsibility. I don't think that, in my mind, should be an issue. I have a little different view than Bob's. My view is if we if we close the lid on one part of Pandora's box, which is the 600 or 700, you know, backyard relocations, in doing that, we open up the other lid on Pandora's box, which is for the other, you know, 1,200 shareholders. We're going to say, well, you did it for them, why not me? So I'm inclined to preserve the quality of the installation, send out a, you know, set of specifications to the plumbers that want to be included. That becomes our quality control mechanism, and we do it for everybody. You know, whether it's a 3-foot or 10-foot or 20-foot relocation, or the 150-foot relocation from the backyard, I think, you know, and if we have to put, you know, a 3%, you know, increase in to cover those expenses in the future, I think let's just quell the noise in the neighborhood, in the community, and be done with it. It's my position.
So on the way that this worked out in terms of ownership and liability, that there are several different ways that we could do this if the board chooses to pay for this. My recommendation would be, and I think the cleanest way to do it, would be that we are not in any way involved in the construction, and we are not even contacting contractors. The homeowner is responsible for hiring a contractor, contracting directly with the contractor, and paying for the work to be done, and then brings us a receipt, and we are only reimbursement. We have no ownership, we have no direct relationship with the contractor, we have no liability, and the only way they get a reimbursement is if they've hired a licensed contractor and they sign hold harmless agreement, that we are not liable at all for any of it. So it's their service lateral, they hired the contractor to do it. We can definitely, and I think we should, recommend, you know, the exact specifications we think it should be built to, but the licensed contractor should know anyways what codes they need to comply with. And we can still, we can add additional requirements if we want to as a requirement to get the reimbursement. So if we want it to be, you know, better than what the minimum code requires, we can do that. It's going to cost us more. But that way, we're not managing construction on 800 different small little construction projects. We're not taking on any liability. We're not taking on any of the administrative burden. It's simply a reimbursement program.
Well, I think that, you know, sounds to me like the belt and suspenders approach. You know, that's the 100% foolproof approach. You know, I just think that, so in my mind, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, so, you know, our contractor goes through with the main line, they put in the lateral, and then somehow or other the homeowner then has to get in touch with the plumber. So there's this whole sort of herky-jerky, I think I read somewhere that there's a one-year grace period for people to move their service, et cetera, et cetera. Why can't we just streamline this whole thing so that the plumber that we, you know, have this contract with on a price per foot of installation works side by side with, you know, the contractors over here, so that it becomes a near seamless proposition. You know, it seems to me that we're, you know, asking our homeowners to go through a whole lot of motion and activity that we could short circuit by, locking, you know, at the hip between plumbers and, you know, the generals.
Well, I think another entirely different approach would be if we want to tie it to the rest of the project that's being done, is we just add it to that. John will have to chime in a little bit here. If we can, we have it all done by the same.
Well, let me just say, one of the policies of USD, and they've dealt with this in Willow Springs, Buena Vista, with a big sewer project. When you're dealing with federal money, even state money for that matter, private property is private property. And unless there's a way of getting easements and getting to that home, you really can't tie it to USDA. They want to separate private property from public so that their costs are only going to be expended on public, you know, property and not private. So there is an issue with trying to combine, but it wouldn't work. I tried that 15, 20 years ago, and I wasn't able to combine the services. So it's just a policy of theirs. It's I think it's written policy, it's a federal statute. So, yeah, so
you need to keep it separate. Difference then with, I guess I'm not clear then on what you're proposing. So it's the contractor that we hire is coordinating with local contractors?
With the plumbers, right?
No. Well, the plumbers that we... I don't know whether we contract directly with them or what, but having the homeowner do that and then us them submitting an invoice and we paying that, you know, seems like it adds an administrative step or two that's really, you know, nonsensical. When, you know, we could have a relationship, let's say it's with three plumbers, that as they drop the laterals, there's an immediate connection made between the house and the meter at that time.
But it's us that is contracting
with the plumbers.
With the plumbers. See, I guess from my perspective, I see that as way more of an administrative burden on our staff than the homeowner handling that part of it. And our staff is now in the business in that scenario of managing 800 individual contracts, construction contracts. Even though they're small contracts, they're managing all of those projects. And we're the one contracting with the contractor, so if there's construction defects or if there's, you know, liability issues, we are in that contract. That's what concerns me.
My retort would be, give us a solution that creates a seamless experience for, you know, our shareholder, so that, you know, we minimize the angst, the hostility, the anger, the frustration that 1,700 shareholders tend to harbor at the moment in one form or another.
I think,
and it goes way beyond the 700 that Bob's talking about.
I think the solution is, and this is up for the board to decide, obviously, but I think the solution is, I think the majority of the angst is, and you guys are much closer to it than I am, but it's probably around the money. And the fact that they're going to have to hire a contractor to come out and do it, as long as at the end of the day they're getting reimbursed for it, I think you address a lot of that angst. But at the same time, you're protecting the water company from that additional administrative burden and from the potential liability.
Initially, I was not in favor of this approach. I'm more in favor of the loan approach. However, if we can solve the liability question by one means or another, and if we can solve the equity question, and then I think this is a good approach. Whether we do it, whether we contract to have it done, although there you're talking about having homeowners need to give us a right of way, permission and a right of way to actually have plumber. Well, we're not actually doing it, but plumber ABC is going to have permission from the homeowner to do that connection of some sort. I like the idea of being able to say you have a fixed window to get this done, 3 months, for example, or this program is no longer available to you, you can take a year, but now it's on you to connect. So we get everybody connected much quicker. And the bottom line is, let's assume for sake of discussion that everybody's connection was going to cost the same amount of money, just for a moment. Then we pay for it, but our members pay for it, because we're going to have to raise rates to generate, in this situation, $654,000 or whatever it is. The inequity is your line is half of what mine is, and we're both going to pay the same amount. I don't have a problem with that. I really don't. I do have some questions, as I said to Bob, about those who've already installed it. Some used contractors, some self-contracted, and I think we need to, we're going to need to decide how to deal with that.
Let me, for purposes of discussion, since we have a plumber in the audience, and Chris and I have already discussed this to a little bit, how would you see the perfect world? Andy's idea is that you'd be a sub to the general contractor doing the heavy-duty work. That's one option. And the other option is that you're on a list of a half a dozen of you from Arnold that do the kind of work that you know has to be done, and the homeowner chooses one of you off the list. You bill the homeowner, and then we reimburse the homeowner. Your thoughts about that process?
Well, as a homeowner, I don't like that idea. As a plumber, I think you guys are just opening up a can of worms you don't need to. Because you guys shouldn't, I don't think you should be involved in any way with the connection from the easement to on private property. The plumber is already liable for a year by law to cover whatever he does. So anything that is wrong or any material that goes bad, he's liable for that for a year. You guys start getting involved in it, then you're just opening up a whole legal can of worms. You don't want it.
Now, our involvement would not be telling you how to do the work.
Right.
It will be telling you what we, based on your best recommendation, what type of product to use. You mentioned a particular type of pipe that's flexible and is better than the old PVC and that sort of thing. We'd like to standardize the hookup to the house, the regulator. But in the perfect world, and one suggestion is you do the work, you're contracted not by us, but by the homeowner. You do the work, the homeowner pays you, you go on to your next job, and the homeowner comes to us with a receipt, and we reimburse the homeowner.
Well, as a plumber, I wouldn't care. That's up to you guys.
That's
correct. But as a homeowner, I don't like it, because I'm a shareholder, and everybody else has had to do it the way we've been doing it over all these years. I've hooked up over 100 of them, and I've never had a problem with people paying or not being able to afford it. And there's a wide spectrum of how much it costs. Anywhere from $200 to, I think my most expensive one was $2,800.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're those people that I did, you know, let's say 8 or 9, 10 years ago that paid all this money back then, you know, they're happy now.
Now,
if they start hearing about this,
we'll deal with that.
Yeah.
We'll deal with that. What I'm talking about is the process. You as a plumber, if you had control over how to be involved, you don't want to work for us, you want to work for the homeowner, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what you'd be doing.
Right.
All we require of you is to use a certain product that's acceptable and use it on all the jobs. Okay, now that being said, homeowner pays you for the work, we reimburse the homeowner. And you said it, you really don't care. You're paid and done.
Yeah, I don't care. I get paid either way. But so.
Well, it's easier. Would it be easier to be paid by the individual homeowner than it would be by the water company?
Easier? I never had a problem getting paid, so it wouldn't matter to me.
Okay.
I think I've had one person out of over 100 hookups I've done that I've had a problem with.
It just seems to me as though we're putting a, you know, an unnecessary step in there with the homeowner paying the plumber and then, you know, submitting an invoice to us and then we, you know, reimburse that person when, you know, the plumber under contract with the homeowner could send the bill to us and we pay him directly.
I think that, doesn't that open them up for legal liability?
You know, we would have a contract in place or a waiver or something, you know, a hold harmless agreement. But the thing about hold harmless agreements is it's something you use as a defense, and you don't even want the litigation. So my, the cleanest, you know, from my perspective, the cleanest way to do it is we don't have any relationship with the contractor at all. There's no exchange of money, there's no contractual relationship, it's between the homeowner, and it's the homeowner's property. And it is a hassle for him to have to do it, but this is part of the property, the cost of ownership of their property at this point, because the water company has to relocate the main.
Well, there's one other factor I think we need to, you know, think about too, and that's, you know, who are our shareholders? The vast majority of them are retirees on fixed incomes. And, you know, while the 20-foot reconnection is probably no problem for anyone, you know, it's the 100-foot, the 150-foot, it's the $4,000 job that, you know, my next-door neighbor has to incur, you know, who's a widow, who's 67 years old, where's she going to find $4,000?
So there's ways that we could, you know, do a kind of a hardship.
But see, now we're making one exception after another. We're sitting here as a board having to sort through all of this, you know, what ifs and what we're on. All I'm saying is let's have a one-for-one sort of an approach. And, you know, if it's the most expeditious way for someone to, you know, pay the plumber and resubmit to us, then okay, I'll fold my tent and go away on that. But then, you know, we have all these, you know, whether they're widows or widowers or, you know, married couples, you know, that, you know, quite honestly can't afford, you know, they have food stamps and, you know, their Medicaid, you know, so it's unfortunately not every one of our shareholders are well-heeled like most of us in this room.
Mm-hmm. You're right, that as soon as you start creating exceptions, you create additional burden, so we really have to be really cautious about that. I mean, I think one other way to handle it would be, instead of creating an exception, is just if you have somebody that expresses that concern, you know, tell them to write the check to the contractor and on the same day bring their receipt in and we'll cut the check.
I think that regardless of how the process works out, whether we pay or we reimburse, we're going to have the exception. I think I'd agree with that. And I think we should prepare to deal with that. You had a comment?
Yeah, I have two questions, and they're actually for Chris. So I don't know all the contractors or licensed plumbers in the area. How many are there that could do this work? I'm not trying to ask how much competition you have, but that's what I want to know.
There's probably five people that really actually do a lot of the work.
And okay.
Probably only three that...
That really do the work?
Yeah, like I'll be working for two other plumbers just with my equipment, because I have equipment.
Okay.
So the three, we'll probably be the main three guys giving out prices.
Okay.
And there's about three to five, there's new guys showing up every day.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if they're licensed and insured,
yeah,
which is a big deal, you know, but there's not a lot of companies that have the equipment,
right,
and they can do it, and I mean they'll give you a price, but they're going to hire somebody to come in and do the trenching for them, and
okay,
you know, it's going to be a higher price.
Okay.
But there's just a handful of guys.
Yeah, that's what I figured. That I wanted to hear from you, because you know that.
And once you start working on a street, you know
everybody
sees you working, and then you just end up getting more jobs. And
yeah.
So.
And I would think as a homeowner, I would want to choose like, oh, I really like Chris, but he made me feel better about what he's going to do on my property than this other contractor. So I would want the ability
and
to hire.
And each plumber has his own way of doing things too. You know, there's different materials that are all legal.
Right.
You know, I stick with one kind of pipe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more expensive and it's I think a better pipe, and there's less problem with human error.
Okay.
See, there's a lot of. Most of the pipes I see that break that are good quality pipes, they just don't put the fittings together properly.
Okay.
They don't care, they don't sand them, they don't clean them, they don't primer them or do something
right
that they're supposed to be doing. And that's why, you know, the county inspects things, but see, on these, the county's not going to be inspected.
Yeah.
So you're solely, you know, mm-hmm, relying on your plumber to do it right.
Okay, I have one more question for you. and this is for you personally, you as a contractor. So if someone comes up to you and they hire you, but it's one of these $4,000 jobs or projects, do you give them any, can they make payments to you over time? Do you
allow that? I've done
that
before, yeah. If it's a single mother or something, I've done that for
okay.
people. But in Blue Lake Springs, I've never had that situation come up.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever run into what you guys would say would be a hard case, you know, because Blue Lake Springs is pretty much a, you know, the wealthiest neighborhood of the area. You don't get a lot of people living in there, a lot of food stamps and
right.
divorcees and stuff that are single, you know.
Okay. Thank you.
I was going to suggest that the board might discuss this as, do we agree in principle with the objective or the goal, and then we either assign it to the Long Range Planning Committee, which is the only committee that's working, or we set up another subgroup to work on all these details to come back with the best solution, and then the board, if they don't like that solution, can vote it down. But if we as a board don't like this in concept, then that sort of pretty well ends it.
Well, I would actually recommend that that's a job for staff and I.
That's fine. That's fine. For.
I misheard that. I'm sorry. You recommend what?
That you don't necessarily need to create a subcommittee for that purpose. Staff and I can work together and put together a proposal that takes into consideration what the board's talking about.
You're saying you and staff will work together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Is that acceptable to the board?
Well, I think, you know, there's a prior question is, where's the board stand on the subject?
Right. That's the threshold.
And that would, and I would suggest that if we approve it in concept, then we are, the therefore from that is a rate increase for next year and into the future to fund it. Because, yes, there's money in the reserves now to fund it, but that money may need to be replaced to fully fund our entire reserve policy, which we don't have yet, and which I'm hoping that we can get a comprehensive reserve policy to the board sometime in the summer.
Well, I have a question. I was told that I had to move my meter from the back of the house to the front of the house, and that was, the expense was on me. When did it change?
It hasn't yet.
It hasn't yet.
It hasn't.
Oh.
That's the question before the board
yeah,
currently.
Yeah, okay.
So and that's one of the naughty little problems of
yeah.
that's off.
When the idea is driven by the fact that we have a sizable reserve. And in keeping with the quiet moment that I have thinking about how is IRS going to look at us as a not-for-profit when we're putting lots of money into the profit side, would it be prudent for us to return some of the money to the shareholders? And that's what's driving the idea. And I'd like to get the board's position here in a moment, but somebody had their hand up. Joe, you had your hand up?
Yeah. Hypothetically, this is title maybe. Can the homeowner make it a position that I'm the homeowner and I bought this house and it had the meter in the back. I don't have anything to do with that, but the water company and the owners, whatever, at that time decided that's what it was. That was a decision not for me. I don't see how I'm liable because you, the water company, have changed your piping system. I got to go and connect it. Whereas, person myself, mine's right up next to it, you know, it's that many feet or whatever, my meter and your deal. But the other guy says, why should I pay for it? You know, you guys put the facility thing there, and now you're changing it. Then why don't you pay for it? And if I need to give you a release to get on my property, I can do that. What can I sue you to say, hey, why should you be paying for it? Your system, I paid my bills, and you got to connect it.
It's typically the property owner's responsibility. The service lateral is the property owner's responsibility.
Yeah, but you changed your deal.
So that's
well, you don't have to hook up to that. You can leave the old one there.
I was fine, and you changed it. Now I got to pay for it.
Yeah, but you want the fire hydrant out in front for your insurance. So we want to improve the system to feed you. Well, then you're going to have to support the system because it's yours. And you know, I have a 1.5-inch line in the back, and there's no hydrant within 1,000 feet anywhere around my place. But my meter's going to go out in front. I see where the stake is, and I got to run it a couple hundred feet, I guess, down to the back of my property. Well, that's my responsibility, and I was going to do it. And if the water company wants to pay for some of it, my feeling is it should be I hire someone, whatever I pay them, and then if you have a repave it, it's just like putting in toilets for, you get a rebate program. So I bring my payment in and you reimburse me to whatever degree we decide to do it. But I don't think we should be going out and putting all of these in or contracting with somebody to do it. It should be the homeowner. Every homeowner is different. And if I'm there, I might want the guy to run it the line a special way. You know, that's my problem.
Yeah. That's another benefit of the homeowner doing it is they can choose. Yeah. You know, they can work with the contractor.
Yeah. Well, if we just went in and most people aren't here, they're going to go in and put in his line and he's not there.
We do need to have some parameters.
He doesn't like where it is. You know?
Yeah. So we do need to have some parameters. If they want to have a gold-plated line, you know, we're going to have some limits on what we'll pay for it, just for homeowner preference. We're not going to reimburse, you know, unnecessary costs. But one other way to do it, which I think might be maybe in between the two different proposals we've mostly been talking about, would be as our contractor is relocating the main, instead of contracting individually, whether it's us or the homeowner, we have one contract with one contractor that is apart from the USDA project, separate from, to come in and put those laterals in as it's moving along. And so it's basically a separate RFP that we put out for an individual plumbing contractor to put all those service laterals in as they come. And we pay for the contract. We have, you know, waivers with and indemnity agreements with each of the homeowners, and we assume no ownership or liability as soon as it's done. As soon as the dirt, you know, the pipe is covered back up, we're out of the picture. The homeowner owns it, but we were paying for the initial install.
Does the water company come out and mark where the meter should go?
It's already done.
All right.
So, for those that don't have them.
Right.
Yeah, even those that have them, they may have to be moved.
But again, that's taking on the work of that construction project, which is a lot of work, and managing that contractor. You know, then we're in the construction business again.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just to be clear, the homeowners are paying for this. Mm-hmm. The water company that has some sort of money that is different than the money that's in every homeowner's pot.
True.
It's just important to understand that, because sometimes we do tend to think of, well, I don't want to pay for it, let the water company pay for it. And in an individual case, that may be appropriate. But when we're talking about such a large number, you're going to wind up paying for it anyway. And that's really when I realized that I really support having the water company do it in some form, not how the mechanics of it work, but that we fund it up front and then we're going to collect it back from our homeowners in annual fees or monthly fees or something like that to reimburse the
Our function is to manage the money.
Correct.
That's what we're going to do. and the process is yet to come. Tom, you ought to comment?
Yeah, so in the town hall meeting today, obviously this is going to be a point that is brought up probably even before I get up and talk about, you know, how this thing's being financed.
They'll be asking us as we pile in the door.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm just bringing it up that we need to make sure that we've got a common position on this, on how to respond to that based on this discussion. It may not be answering the full question, but we need to have a good response that that we're all in favor of.
Well, I would have a slightly different take on that. Might be, we're still deliberating.
Yeah.
We haven't answered that question yet, and just using this as an opportunity to get input. You know, which of these ideas do you, these are different ideas that we're discussing, which of these do you like, do you have other ideas? And we take that into consideration because we're not going to answer this question yet. It's going to take us some time to figure out the mechanics of this one way or another. I mean, at some point we need to answer the yes or no question, we're doing it or we're not doing it. But if the answer is yes, it's going to take us some time to figure out how this is going to work. And so I would just view today as an opportunity to get input and, you know, bounce ideas around, not as... I definitely don't think we should go in there and say, here's what we're doing.
Not against money.
Right.
But just as a, you know, there's deliberation within the water company still. It sounds like apparently some deliberation within the subdivision. So let's
Well, unfortunately, I think, you know, the horse has already left the barn on some of this issue, because I don't know what the plan is as far as PowerPoint, but, you know, at least the draft presentation I saw, you know, has in bold letters one more time, it's the shareholders' responsibility for the hookup, and that's going to become the lightning rod, and I think we have to have at least some directional commentary that goes beyond just we're in deliberations.
What, I mean, we can describe the options that we're discussing in, you know, to the degree that we have detail. But I would open it up as an opportunity to get input so that they, I mean, I would think shareholders want to feel like they have voice in this process, and then we can take all that into consideration and come up with recommendations.
Sharon, you had a comment?
Yeah, I have another question back to the original $645,000. Does that include the people who, like you, who have to have their box moved? Or is this just the back lot? Does that make sense?
Well, I think the number that he started with originally is just
it's just an estimate based on average footage. So if you take the average footage of the long guys and the average footage of the short guys,
it's
just an...
But that's backyard relocation guys.
It's not
and
the front. And
front. And front.
Okay.
And front, because
so that's 1,700.
We had a minimum, a maximum, and you come in the middle and you get an average. And then you have a price per foot, and that's your 600 and whatever.
There's 417 front lot relocates, and those are typically between 5 and 15 feet, because you already have a regulator there, so it's going to be short.
I just was asking if that number included those lots.
It did. And then there's 559 in the back, so those are the longer ones, so we kind of took an average.
Okay.
Okay.
So the $700,000 number, let's round up, would be inclusive of all 1,700 properties?
No.
No, 900.
Some of them don't need anything.
There's just the relocates that the homeowner has to do. So there's some front lot relocates and some back lots.
So how many do not need anything?
Mine's gone.
Well, 900, was that right?
Well, it's 1,050, but they're going to maybe need new boxes and stuff,
right.
But not.
Yeah.
That's not relocating.
That's all up to the contractor. It's not going to be private.
Yeah.
But, okay, so I'll use my situation as an example. I share a box with my next-door neighbor. The new stake is 4 feet from the meter box. Is that considered a relocation?
Yes. You're one of the front mainline relocates, correct.
There's
so it would be
piping
covered.
That has to be done.
You're going to have to reconnect to this new meter box. You will.
Yeah.
So... in the $700,000 number, the cost for, you know, the connection from the home to the box is in that number?
Yeah, you're a part of that.
Okay.
And again, that's...
Or your old box.
There's all kinds of potentials in terms of some of these backs relocate here. Some of the costs really don't know. It's pretty expensive. There's trees, there's gas.
Oh, yeah. Then driveways. And
one at a time, please. Okay. You had the question answered.
Yeah. I just, you know, I think this is a nice idea. I think it's kind. It is their money. It's our shareholders' money that we're talking about using. I think if we're going to go forward with this, we need to look at the other 400, 500 homes who've already paid to have their boxes relocated. And so I think that number goes up significantly. So, and the problem will be is some people did it on their own because they were told they don't have a receipt from a licensed contractor.
Well, there are certain parts of the past that we just don't have any control over.
Right.
And there's some of the past remedies that we can invent and satisfy. And for the homeowner that did it all on their own, well, if they have any receipts in the product they bought, we can reimburse that. But I think that before we go too much further, I need from the board a motion to accept either we're going to have a rebate program or we're not. If we're going to have a rebate program, then I would suggest we appoint a committee of three to come up with the rules of engagement. And let them decide whether we're going to do it directly. If the feeling of the board is we do not want to become directly involved, then we go to the other option, which is a rebate option. And we stay with that. If that's the feeling of the board, I'll need a motion to entertain one of those two. A motion to create a system where we oversee the contracts. That's what you suggested, Andy. Or I'd accept a motion to where the board would oversee a rebate program, and then we'll let the committee work out the details. I think we're at that point. We're going to move on this. We should move on this.
Let me ask, is it Chris, the plumber?
Chris.
Is it realistic to believe or think that one plumbing contractor could do all of this work over an 18-month period of time?
No.
18 months now.
18 months.
In the winter.
Oh, winter.
Yeah, but then I don't think you can legally do that. I don't see how you have so many different owners. They would all have to be able to sign a contract to accept that contractor. Yeah. And in a way, that's why we're contractors. It's a competition between us.
Well, I'm just teeing off from one of Bob's thoughts is that we contract with the plumber with one firm to work.
I don't think you can do that legally. You guys can't contract for so many private homeowners.
Sure can. Well, we would have to have that agreement with the homeowner.
Right, so they either have to have everyone, I'm saying, and there's going to be a lot of people that are going to want to do their own.
Exactly.
They're going to want to hook up their own, and some people have old piping, some people have good piping. They might not want to replace their old piping, and so then you're connecting to old piping, and then you're opening your, you know, there's just a lot of things in there that could...
Okay, before we get any deeper in this, we have to come to grips with if we're going to get involved in covering the cost for the homeowner, do we want to pay it through our contractor or do we want to use a rebate program? It's the or.
Well, I don't know that you necessarily need to answer that question today.
Well, I'll tell you why I'd like to answer today. Because we owe the people an answer and they're going to ask it today. And we ought to be able to stand up and tell them, and I'm prepared to do so, that, yeah, we're working on a rebate program. And we haven't got all the details finalized yet. But since we're compelling you to move, we feel the responsibility to pay for it. It's your money.
Right. So I guess...
Yeah. And I appreciate your caution.
There needs to be consent. Yeah, so the board can decide whether they want to... go that far or not. But then I think the next step is either a committee, if you want to go that route, or otherwise direction to staff has been given to come up with options or a proposal for how this is going to work. Whether it's rebate or we're contracting directly, you know, we can still leave both those options on the table and present those options to the board once they're more fully flushed out.
Yeah, the reason I'd like to mention it is because I want to get in front of the matter. Otherwise, it will manage us. And to tell the whoever's there that we're working on a system to cover the cost. It's true. We haven't developed a system yet. But the goal is to make sure the homeowner does not have an out-of-pocket expense for what we're requiring them to do.
But I think it would be less confusing if the homeowner would pay for their, would get their own contractor and then
have it
done.
That's what we'll get there. Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Much less confusing.
Okay.
Well, I think the basic question is, and I would make a motion that we move toward reimbursing, you know, our shareholders for the cost of relocating their
service
connection.
That would cover if I could, the front and the back. Mm-hmm. People have to move things in front.
Right.
People have to move things in the back.
Right.
So now that I've interrupted you, would you repeat that, the motion, please?
What did I say, Lee?
He would like to move toward reimbursing shareholders their cost of relocating their service line.
I would second that.
Okay.
It's relocating their house line,
their
not
their service line.
Yeah.
The house line. Okay.
And Sharon seconded?
Yeah. Second. On the question, yes.
Can I offer a suggestion that we add to the motion that we ask staff to develop alternatives and bring it back to a future board?
Yeah, if this is approved as proposed, that will happen.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah, I don't think that has to be part of the motion.
I want the board to take action on the matter.
No, I understand.
Okay. Everyone understands the motion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying yay.
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 And opposed, say nay. Matter carries. Thank you.
Now, Bob, may I point out just one thing?
Sure.
To raise $225,000... approximately half of what we're a third of what we're talking about here, would mean an increase of 15%
mm-hmm.
in our rates that generate $1.5 million. In other words, if you take the $1.5 million,
mm-hmm.
15% of that is $225,000, and we would need to raise that in three consecutive years to fund. If we're going to replace these funds in the reserves, which I believe we're going to have to do to properly fund our reserves going into the future.
Are you projecting reserve accumulation similar to what we had last year going forward?
Yes.
Could it just eat into that?
Yeah. It could do that.
It could do that. Because that's we have a healthy reserve return right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So it doesn't necessarily all have to be covered in the rate.
Correct.
Okay, I want to get back on to the
budget.
The budget, and if we're going to entertain any type of a rate increases here, 1% rate increase, by the way, generates $15,000. That's one way to look at it.
Yeah.
And I don't allude to the fact that a rate increase is going to pay for this $645,000. No, that was never my intention, and I appreciate your comments on it. I think we ought to use some of the reserve money. I think that's why we have it. And to cover our budget, our civil budget increases what it has to do with salaries and costs and services during the calendar year.
I understand that.
Good.
That presumes that our reserves in the future will be less than what they are now.
That's all right.
That's okay, but that's what it presumes.
That's all right.
As long as we all understand that
yes.
we come back with a reserve policy
yes.
that says that the reserves have to be increased by some number,
yes.
then the future is different than what we're projecting. And I really don't have any idea. I don't know, Tom. I mean, we're going into a $12 million project. I have no idea what kinds of reserve. How much of a reserve is built into the $12.5 million?
10% on.
How much?
10%.
A million one. Okay. If the project has overruns that are greater than $1.1 million, we're going to have to come. We're going to have to find the money.
Okay.
Or if the bid comes in, the bids come in. Yeah.
That wouldn't that come out of the capital improvement account, where there's you project by the end of the year $995,000.
That's the account Bob is taking $665,000.
No,
not Bob. No. I'm sorry.
I apologize. You got it right.
I apologize.
No. You're correct, but it's not all in the first year.
You are correct. Again, you are correct.
That's so Bob.
That is.
On that note, I'm going to go to the bathroom.
I
can write a personal check.
Very many of the.
Water talk.
You know, the construction doesn't start till June at the earliest, right? So I doubt a lot of the service laterals will even be put in 2018.
I would assume, Sharon, you probably won't have any in 2018. It won't be till the
spring
of
2019
year.
We start putting them all in.
It'll be 19.
So,
I appreciate the fact that there's a lot of things that are going to happen mm-hmm. over time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying I am naturally very conservative. I would much prefer to be looking at this board 2 years from now or 3 years from now and say, we overestimated the amount we needed for reserves and we've got $300,000 and we can rebate to all of our customers. Then the flip side of that, we're short $300,000 and we need to have a special assessment to raise the money. And or it could be zero. I mean, we could hit it right on the nose. I don't know.
As you're developing your reserve policy, I would like to know legally what we're allowed percentage-wise as a nonprofit to carry over. Because I know a lot of nonprofits I do work for, we can't carry things over. We can only carry like 10% of your overall budget over from year to year.
I would deliver
that.
Yeah. It probably has a lot to do with what are the funds potentially earmarked for.
Right.
Yeah, as opposed to
I would certainly hope it's more than 10%.
I would hope so.
That's totally
well, right.
For
right.
Our
right.
Right. It would have to be because most nonprofits, well, the HOA has tremendous amount of assets that they have to then replace, and so they must have reserves of over $1 million, $2 million up there, or they should to fund the all of the repairing and replacing
mm-hmm.
everything.
I think it's. A pittance that they have.
That may be, but they should
they
have.
They strip it down quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it's under $100,000.
They got to go back. And, yeah, it's mm-hmm. this would have been spent down. They had a whole bunch out of like $100,000.
Hence the new
cuts. Well, we do not want to be in the position of only having $100,000 in reserve.
I just want to, for my comfort level, I want to know that we're not carrying over. We're not just. I'm not going to use the. I want to say hoarding money. That's, you know, at our shareholders' expense. That's not what I want to do. So.
Good point. And I don't want to hoard money either.
Tom.
So from everything I'm hearing, we know that it sounds like anyway that the this expense will probably not occur until 2019.
And 2020.
And 2020.
The 645?
Yeah.
My view of the world, it's not going to start until mid to late 2018.
Construction's going to start around June.
Yeah,
okay.
It'll be 2019, Bob, but before the services are ready to be connected, at least 2019.
Okay,
so.
Okay, so.
So my point is, we got time to work this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, and to that end, I would ask staff, and Mr. Minkler's volunteered, I'll volunteer to work on it as well.
Well, I guess it does beg the question of, you know, is there a rate increase for this coming year?
Right.
That's the next item.
Well, I guess in light of that, though, the board doesn't need a rate increase this coming year to fund this program, even if the board...
No, this is not, the rate increase, good point. The rate increase is not designed to fund this program.
Right.
Okay. I raise up to the rate increase because there's nothing mentioned, there was nothing in the budget. And I'll entertain the board's thought on a rate increase or not.
Well, I think in lieu or in light of, the prior motion to reimburse, shareholders for the relocation, we're accruing a future liability that we need to do some hedging against in this coming year. So I think, a rate increase of some amount is warranted. Your 15% scares the Jesus out of you. So I would rather be on the offense as opposed to the defense and do some rate increase. Maybe it's minimal, 3%, 4%. At least we're hedging against that. And I'm going to save us some money elsewhere in your budget, but we'll save that for executive session.
Okay.
Would you put that in the form of a motion, or the board have other thoughts? Recommending, his recommendation, as I heard it, was 3, is that correct?
It was 3?
Yeah.
So, just to, on the side of caution, we have a budget discussion on the agenda today. We do not have a rate increase.
It's part of the budget.
So if that's the board's interpretation of the budget item on the agenda today, then I would say go ahead.
Okay.
But you might get some pushback on that if people hear that there was a rate increase that they didn't realize that was on today's budget.
Good point.
On the agenda.
Well, Michael, I would just point out that the detail on the first line says no rate change from 2017 for all fees and change and charges. This is my recommendation to the board. So I think
that could be interpreted as notice that this was going to be discussed today. Mm-hmm. It's not clear notice, but it could be that was the notice that was given. You might get some pushback because there wasn't.
Okay. Well, the discussion on the rate increase is a reaction to the recommendation of none.
I'm just...
Okay. How would you suggest that we move forward?
If you want to err on the side of caution, you, in the next agenda, even if it's January, it's a specific item on the agenda that says discussion of rate increase.
We'll have to have one before January, because the bills will go out the end of December.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll have to just have a teleconference if that's the worst.
And if we can do that, Bob, it has the advantage of, rather than a percentage, we can work towards 3%, but we would be able to say, here's the precise rates that we're proposing, because even now with 3%, you do not want to get into and 27 cents or something like that.
And that's exactly why you would normally have a specific item on the agenda for that item and the numbers to back it up. I think that would be...
So 3% would be like 45,000?
Mm-hmm.
Approximately.
And would cover the cost of salary increases and increases in goods and services. Okay, then as I hear the board, we'll do an electronic meeting in December. Is that correct?
The sooner the better.
Bills have to go out.
With a proposal for a rating.
Okay, yeah. Well, give me a date and we'll. In 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
That's Thanksgiving.
That's good.
Why not?
That's
why
it's
do
it's
do
it. The.
During the 20th, 21st?
Spirit of giving. I like that. Okay.
Thanks. I gave it the. the board meeting.
I'll tell you what. Well, in the interest of time, it'll be at least 10 days to 2 weeks from now. We'll get everyone noticed a week 10 days in advance. You'll hear from us by email on Monday or Tuesday of the next week, and this will be the sole item.
Well, just a real quick agenda discussion since we're on it. We actually have a hard deadline today.
I'm sorry?
We actually have a hard deadline today for the end of this meeting, because we have another meeting, right?
Yeah.
And we may, at the rate we're going now, there may be other things that are on that agenda.
Yeah, okay. Okay, but for sure the rate increase will be on.
Sure.
All right.
I'll second Andy's motion if no one else has.
3%.
Was that a motion that was on the table?
It's not a motion for a rate increase. It's just a motion that there will be a proposal for a rate increase at a future meeting, which will be in a couple of weeks.
All right. We'll get the details.
Do I need to note that?
No. Thanks. So we don't need a motion for that.
Okay.
Okay. Do, if I can, again, on this detail page, point out a couple of things.
Okay.
Do we know what page in the electronic document?
That's a good question.
Is it this one? It's page
that's
19.
That's it.
19 and 20.
Under general expenses.
Yeah, it comes up.
About the fifth or sixth item down is an item called miscellaneous dues mileage. CC charges is credit card charges. And you'll notice that we've gone from a budget of $5,500 to a proposed budget of $30,000. That assumes that 50% of our membership avails themselves of the opportunity to use their credit card to pay their bills. If, and those, that's our charge, which is 2.5.
When you say our charge, you're talking about a conveyance fee.
Correct. The merchant charge of 2.5%.
Right.
And so this will be the first year that the members have had the opportunity to pay their entire bill with their credit card. I have no idea how many are going to do it. This is half of them. And so that's what that big jump is.
Okay.
You can read the other. There's a proposal here budget $15,000 for hiring of a CPA or an equivalent consultant to provide the board with a level of expertise that we currently don't have with regard to our financial statements and other issues. The other items you can see are there's references or notes made. The other item that maybe should have had a note, but that's my fault we didn't do it, is almost at the bottom, just in water treatment, there is $70,000 for fencing and containers, and that's really the developing what I'll call a corporation yard for the project. And that would be our expenses to do that.
I would think that's the contractor's expense to do that.
Sorry, but that fencing was for improved fencing at the treatment plant.
No, that $70,000 was for building the yard. There was an additional $11,000 for replacing the fence at the treatment plant. We had bid for last week.
Sorry, I had it wrong.
Okay. I don't know.
The contract.
I would think that's the contractor's responsibility, and it's funded out of the USDA loan.
And
that's,
I don't want it to be our responsibility.
Yeah. We should. It's their responsibility to build their fence, keep their site intact.
Okay. And
so
protect their own equipment.
They protect their own equipment.
Protecting their equipment, and I don't want us to be responsible for that.
So that's my suggestion.
Do you want to adjust the budget, or just not leave it there and just not spend it? We can do.
What's your recommendation?
Personally, I'd leave it there and just not spend it in case we wind up with some issue down the road that we're not.
This is liquid document anyway.
Yeah.
So no, I'm okay with it.
Well,
I mean, I think if we add a note,
a long way to fund that 3%.
It does.
Yeah. Okay.
But we're gonna pay it no matter what. If the contractor does it, it's gonna be in the loan, and we're gonna have to repay it through the loan.
Got it.
In any event, the bottom line is that. Our total expenses would be $1,200,000, I'm rounding, and our contingency reserve would be $1,400,000, and the grand total would be 2.6, and that's equivalent to our projected income, which is 2.6. And if anybody has any questions about the details, I'll let Lee or Dave
respond to them. No, I don't. My goal here was not to learn all of the various line items and what they all go for.
So I have a question about under the USDA expenses. There's nothing proposed for 2018, or is it $5 million proposed for 2018? I'm confused. Maybe I'm missing it. At the very bottom.
At the very bottom, that again is a more of a footnote or an information item.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really part of the budget, and that's just a guesstimate of what the USDA loan might, what we might be spending. But it really is more of a footnote.
It's not part of the budget.
It's not part of our budget.
But where is the budget for our engineering? Because we are paying that, right?
Dave?
Is that in there?
Yes.
Is that? I think that's the USDA project, the $410,000.
Yes.
So we are funding that.
I'm sorry, we're funding it in what way? Isn't that being recharged to the USDA?
Yeah, but we're not going to see that money for 2 years, right? Yeah. So we have to pay it. It comes out of our budget for 2018, right?
No, we'll get it 30 days, right? Or what's the reimbursement?
Well, it just depends on what process we go through. Remember, reimbursement, we didn't have an interim loan, and we were able to finance with USDA. Once we open bids, they will, within probably 60 days, reimburse all the design costs. If there's an interim loan, the question, have that answer with the interim loan, will they still get reimbursed? Will we get reimbursed once we have an interim loan for construction? So
my understanding from, and I know this is based on discussions with Frank Rizzo, who's no longer with the USDA, when we initially talked about interim financing, he said you almost won't notice the difference. You still send your reimbursement request to USDA. They still approve the reimbursement request within a few days, but the only difference is where the funds come from. We'll get reimbursed by the interim lender as opposed to getting reimbursed by USDA. So we don't have to wait till the end of construction to get reimbursed.
But I think Sharon's point, though,
is a great one, because what should be in here is all of those expenses, and then the reimbursement is income.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can certainly do that. The net effect on the bottom line is the same.
Correct.
It's zero.
It should be a wash, but otherwise you're paying out expenses and you're receiving money that is not accounted for in the budget.
Yeah.
It must be a wash.
It will be a wash, but it has to be accounted for.
Okay, so let me ask a question. You would see, for example, the entire $12.5 million being run through our budget?
I think it's an expense that we're going to pay, and then we're going to receive income as a reimbursement. Or reimbursement, not income. We don't want to call it income.
The income will be the surcharges that the shareholders will incur once that loan.
No, that's not what. Okay, I understand it. But what we're talking about is the payment, the $12.5 million payment to the contractor.
Well, how else do you track that money going out and coming in?
Yeah, well, you could do it in a separate capital improvement budget. It becomes an addendum to the year.
And I've done that in other projects where I've had a separate account.
I mean, that's
to be managed just because it was easier to audit.
That's what we tried to do with this. And again, I don't pretend to have a precise answer to that question.
And I'm not a finance expert.
And we need to ask somebody who's. But let me just say, for purposes of the operating budget, that, in effect, is what we've done, because down at the bottom, we have the USDA expenditures isolated and a reimbursement for a net effect to us of zero. Now, if we moved all of that up into the operating budget, it would still have a net effect at the bottom line of zero.
Right.
And so I'm not sitting here saying this is the correct way to handle it, but the math of it is such that moving it into the operating budget will not affect the bottom line.
Yeah, this does open up, I think, to your point about needing a financial consultant or an accounting consultant, is we don't have a capital line in our budget per traditional capital budget management, you know, there's no amortization of, you know, trucks or pumps or, you know, items of, you know, $5,000 value, et cetera, and there really should be, so that we as a board understand, you know, what's happening from an aging of our equipment, you know, standpoint.
You should, I really personally think you should have a fixed asset management program with the new construction going on and all your new systems.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to, you know, it'd be fully depreciates one thing, but it'd be nice to have some reserves that would go to future replacements along with equipment, but it would also be your pipelines, your wells, and some of that. So, you know, in terms of reserves, that's always important to have a little cushion there.
I'm going to move the budget, that the board approve the budget as submitted. For purposes of having something to talk about, because eventually we are going to have to either approve it as submitted or as amended.
Is there a second?
I don't understand why we have to have a...
He's just opening the discussion.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand why we had to make a motion to approve a budget as submitted when we already know there's a rate increase that we're going to talk about later.
Well, we can take the money from the contingency reserves and put it into the rate increase if you want.
You could also defer the approval of the budget until that meeting where we also discuss the rate increase.
There's a motion on the floor to approve the budget. We'll be happy to discuss it after there's a second.
I'll second.
Okay. On the matter, on the discussion. Sharon.
I just was unclear why, since we already think there's a rate increase, why we would approve this budget at this time.
Without the rate increase.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I'm kind of where Sharon is.
Well, there's two ways to do it, I think. One would be approve this budget now, which does not include a rate increase. And then at the next meeting, if a rate increase is approved, the budget is amended to include additional income.
Right.
But if no rate increase is approved, the budget...
But doesn't that call out in the minutes the fact that... doesn't that highlight the rate increase discussion? Doesn't that create... potential, you know,
greater. No, because there's no rate increase here.
Recommendation on this budget is no rate increase.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
but the fact that we approve this budget and then we come back and amend it with a, you know, rate increase seems to me as though it's, you know, waving a red flag in the face of, you know, shareholders, as opposed to tabling this until such time as, you know, these other factors are incorporated into, you know, what becomes the budget as opposed to the amended budget.
I think the red flag is raised when you agendize a meeting to discuss rate increases, which is what we're going to do. So whether
we agendize, you know, a budget discussion as opposed to specifically a rate increase.
Well, we have that. We could do that today.
That's a problem today.
But we're sending the treasurer back to, you know, take into consideration other factors in the budget, which, you know, I need to talk about in executive session.
Right, but the idea is that the next meeting's agenda would say an item on that agenda is a discussion of a rate increase. And there could also be a second item that is approval of the budget based on the board's determination regarding the rate increase, or you could just approve it now without the rate increase and amend the budget when you decide.
Whatever.
Can I suggest that we talk about a review of the rate structure, not necessarily rate increase? And number two, I agree with your comments and deferring approving of the budget until all of the pieces are known, and we know that we're going to look at rates. So I would support deferring action on the budget until the special meeting.
You do so by withdrawing the motion.
I can do that. I'm giving the lead.
Palpitations over here. It needs to be done ASAP, and we're putting it off again.
Well, so we're all clear.
you're the maker of the motion. You either we go with it and vote on it, or you withdraw it, or somebody moves to table the matter.
I'll withdraw it. I'll withdraw it to be considered at the next meeting.
And the second?
Second.
No. The second agrees with the draw. Okay.
Okay.
The matter is off. There's no vote on it.
Okay.
Okay. So the approval of the budget then is deferred until our next meeting.
Correct. And that'll allow everybody to take some more looks at individual items.
We have to do that before our next regular board meeting.
No. What I said at the next meeting, then that doesn't say it's going to be in January. Yeah. But we'll by Tuesday we'll know when the next meeting is. Okay. Item next, manager's report.
No, there's a new agenda policy.
New agenda policy. Oops.
Make a suggestion here that be in the interest of time, it's not essential that it be handled today, it be deferred, because we're not going to make it through this agenda at this point. And that's fine with me, Bob, if we defer this.
Defer to January?
The new agenda policy item is yours, Lee?
Yes.
Okay, and you defer? Thank you. Manager's report.
Okay. There's not much to talk about for October, really. It's production was up a little bit from last October. But if you look at the whole year from January through October, wells production, it's almost exactly matches last year. And that reflects onto our drawdown or our water supply in the wells. Water levels in the wells and wells 3 and 4 are up slightly from last year. And pumping is this relatively the same. So it could indicate, only could indicate a possible inflow of water from last winter's rains. It's about 10 feet or so. Different.
You know, what's interesting to note, and I don't want to take too much time on this, but at Sequoia Woods Country Club, there's a pond lake on the 15th hole, which I've heard members say they've never seen water actually being drained out of that, or flowing out of that lake, ever. And it has not stopped since the winter. There's still a really good flow out of it. So, hydrostatically, there's certainly water in the ground.
Right. That water is being used, the water.
Well, I know it's being used, right. But, there's more water than the pond holds.
Absolutely.
And so it could indicate a slight inflow, maybe. Don't know yet. As for the usage, it is also mirroring last year through October. No dramatic changes. I think we will have plenty of water in the wells to meet the holiday demand, even if we weren't buying water from CCWD, but so we're in great shape. There's no surprises at all.
Any questions or comments from the board? Anybody in the audience have a question or comment? Thank you. Item next, service lateral program. We cover that, Andy?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. I'm good. Long range planning, Tom?
Okay. In the interest of time, I'll just discuss this, a lot of this at a summary level. But we had a long-range planning committee meeting a couple weeks ago, and the topics that we had on that agenda to discuss were review of the long-range planning committee charter and updated usage study data. We had several others, we got into a lot of discussion regarding the financial statements and the 2018 budget. So a lot of these got put on hold until our next meeting. And those that are for future long-range meetings are reserve accounts. We've had a lot of talk about reserve accounts, contingency. 2018 rate structure. Part of that will depend on some of these decisions that are going to be made. Commercial rates, we still need to work through that and see if anything we recommend any changes to the HOA or Sequoia Woods rates. Accounting firm audit, billing schedule and payment options, and cash flow analysis. The next page. So if you remember a couple months ago, I brought forward what were our original long-range planning committee charter and our proposed goals. From that, I used kind of that same format and came up with the next few pages that talk about our mission statement, our charter, our goals, which are rate structure goals, operational goals, financial and accounting goals, and communications goals. So that kind of followed the same format that we used on our initial plan. So the mission statement, it's just a top-level statement that we want to provide a safe and reliable long-range water supply at an effective and predictable cost for the shareholders over the next 40 years. The charter, it basically, it just talks about the fact that the Long Range Planning Committee is an advisory committee to the Board of Directors. We make recommendations to the Board on the topics that are presented to us to go review and bring back recommendations. We focus on a three-year plan, which is basically our USDA capital improvement plan at this point. We also focus on water usage analysis and the rate structure that falls out of all that. The goals, I'm not going to get into all the details, but as I mentioned, we have rate structure goals, provide a rate structure that's stable and predictable, promotes conservation, fairness, and equity. Operational goals, we operate as a resource to the Board of Directors, meet at least quarterly, and work on things as the Board requests us to. Financial and accounting, ensure high quality, reliable water at an acceptable financial cost. The third bullet on that page is the one that I brought up before. It mentions separating operations and maintenance budgets from capital and infrastructure improvements. Our budgets, the way that they are currently being structured, do not separate that out. So that's going to be a change from what was one of our goals. Communication goals, stay transparent in our communications and keep the shareholders involved and engaged in as we move forward on our recommendations. And the tasks, there's a lot of tasks there that talk about a lot of the things that were in the agenda. Basically, we will discuss a lot of items, water meter usage studies, rate structures, commercial rate structures, multi-year cash flow analysis, billing schedules, billing payment options, reserve accounts, and things like that. So those will be in our long-range committee meetings going forward, and we will discuss them, come up with a recommendation that gets brought back to the Board for a vote. So, we agreed as a committee that these were okay. I made a few changes to them that were recommended during our meeting. So, if the Board chooses to, this is our recommendation for our charter and goals and tasks. And I leave it up to you to decide if you need to vote on it or as a Board.
One question. I received a couple of emails from people that are concerned about rates, hidden fees, and have offered to help, is there a chance that the committee could grow, or would it be better just to have input, people that want to help or make comments to the committee come through me? And
yes.
Or is the committee going to stay the same and not have any more? If somebody wanted to volunteer for it, would you want it to be any bigger?
Well, in my opinion, as far as officially being on the board and being in our meetings,
mm-hmm.
And you guys chime in, but I think that it's added. We, you know, I know we're going to talk about adding Andy officially, but I would welcome any comments mm-hmm. from people, and we would definitely bring them into our discussion. I don't think, in my opinion, I would want to add any more people onto the board.
But they would be, if a guy wanted to help, he would need information the committee, only the committee had, and maybe. So do you want,
Well, you know. Yeah, I guess it depends what it is. I mean, these get published,
Yes, it's all open. Okay, I think I haven't heard.
Why don't we, if you get an inquiry from one of our customers or not, refer it to Tom.
Okay.
You know, and keep it that way, and then you can communicate as you choose to do so. Joe?
Do you know, Dave, of any high-powered people that may be of value? I mean, if you got somebody that's really good that is knowledgeable.
I don't. I've had a couple emails from people that want to say that, you know, they'll offer their help in some of these thinking, referring to other water companies and rates and hidden fees and
hidden
be
fees.
Careful of hidden fees
hidden
and
fees.
All this kind of stuff. So I'm just saying
they're the same people that are on nextdoorneighbor.com.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, there's a people
are Andy's, browsing. Those are Andy's friends.
Yeah.
See, I was being straight. Is there somebody with disability experience that you could use?
I don't know.
For the board and all that, yet, right?
Well, it might behoove the board to, you know, put some sort of limit.
For yeah. members?
Yeah. You know, both board member, number of board members, as well as number of public. Otherwise, you know, if you get into the situation of, well, we're going to pick a good one, but then we're going to dismiss the bad one, you know, what's the judgment that goes into that? And I think, you know, we have to be...
The Open Meeting Act has settled part of this for us, in that if there are more than three board members on the committee for any reason at any meeting, it has to be publicized as a regular meeting would be, because there's now a board quorum present. So originally there were four board members, and with the inception of the Open Meeting Act, we reduced it to three. And the only discussion we've ever had with long-range planning is to make sure they get people out of the community that have nothing to do with the board. And we've gone with two of those. And it's up to, if long range planning feels they need, I don't know, somebody else, that'll go seek and find. But the board is not going to detail anyone else, so we can stay out of the Open Meeting Act issues. Yeah.
Can I suggest that at a future board meeting we talk about not necessarily the Open Meeting Act, but I think we should publish when the Long Range Planning Committee meetings are being held and where, so that members could attend. Sure. Otherwise, we're making recommendations and meeting in secret and all
That's
of that other
problem.
Stuff.
In fact, one thing we're going to do today is to appeal to people for their email addresses so we can get a greater data bank.
That's fine.
That's easier to work in a smoke-filled room than
also. Anything else, Tom, on long range?
Just quickly, over the last, throughout this year, Sharon has been collecting water meter usage data.
Yes.
So there's a water usage study comparison page in here. I noticed yesterday as I was going through this that I don't know how, but those numbers were all screwed up. And so the bottom line of that first bullet up there is, as of, I took the October data that just recently came out, and as of October, you know, we're at 5,383 cubic feet, which is a trend up of only 0.6% from 2016 October. Mm-hmm. So we're very close to the 2016. That 2016 was at 5,349, and we're only up approximately 1.3% from 2014. Mm-hmm. Which was at October, it was at like 5,311. Based on all that data through October, I'm estimating that we'll probably be at about 6,249 at the end of the year. So bottom line was, 2014 was stage two, 5,312. 2015 was stage three, that's when it dropped way down. But if you compare 2014 to 2016, which is stage two, and 2017, which is stage one, we're very close for all those 3 years. We're like a percent apart. So aside from the stage 3 year, the total usage in cubic feet has been very, very close. Currently have 662 radio read meters installed, so we had a lot more data to use in the study for this year. So we took the data from January through September, took out zero readings and extreme readings that appeared to be errors. One observation noted is there is a lot higher use in the July, August, September months, which is understandable, but didn't really realize it until you look at this data. The average cubic feet per month goes from 217 in all the other months versus 450 in those 3 months of July, August, and September. So it really, really grows. Down at the bottom, it just shows the 2017 usage data versus the prior history that we had, and all the data that we used last year from January to October. And what that shows is roughly two-thirds for 2016 and three-quarters for 2017 used less than the base allocation, the current base allocation. So a very large percentage used less than our current base allocation, and they only use a quarter of the water. So three-quarters of people are only using a quarter of the water. The cubic foot averages for the higher tiers were very similar from year to year, if you look at them. So for like 351 to 700, the average was 471 versus 491 this year. For 701 to 1400, 961 was the average last year, 967 this year. Above 1400, average was 2467 versus 2448. So you can see that the averages for those tiers was pretty similar from year to year. The next two pages just show
the... Can I stop you for just a second, Thomas? You pointed out this, the three quarters and one quarter, but am I reading this correctly, that 4% of our users use one third of our total water?
Based on our study.
The meter users.
Well, right. Only the meter people.
Of the people in the study.
In the meter.
No, the people who have meters.
People who have meters. Okay.
Right.
Of the people who have meters, 4% of those people use one third of the total water.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It
was a lot.
Last year it was 25%. But we had less people in the meters in the study.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that I understand.
No, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
We should be right back.
So I'm not going to go into any of the following two pages show all the tables of the detail that was used to come up with that summary that I just read.
Okay. So there's going to be a come to justice meeting when the meters go in.
So just a quick note, I did a little math I think, based on the data from this study, that the meter usage income that we can probably expect for next year is about $18,000.
The from consumption alone?
Right.
Yeah.
Just based on the study data.
It's not very much.
No. Mm-mm. It doesn't amount to much.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, questions or comments from the board? That's an incredible piece of work.
By the way,
sure.
He did it all.
I mentioned to the long range committee, I'm going to be up here sometime next week through the rest of the year. So I hope to find times where the committee can meet over that 6 weeks a couple times, and we can iron our way through a lot of things on our agenda.
Got it. Any comments or questions or long range?
Yeah, just Tom, if you take the next level up, if you add the greater than 700 feet, you get, what's it, 11% use 54% of the water. Tom talked about 4% using a third. If you go one more step up, and you got 11% using 54% of the water.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, so then the rest of it are under the under the base load. So half of the people are using over 700%. So that's where your tiers are going to come in.
Yeah.
So if you look, if you just look at the data scatters,
20% are using
half of the people are under the base load, and the other half are in the tiers.
But not all of the meter users are full time.
Yeah, we did away with the part time versus full time. We just took that out of the equation.
Yeah, it's the entry. Well, yeah, okay.
That's a big topic for future long range planning committee meetings.
Sure is. It's something that, you know, when the part timers are complaining, which they are, that they subvent the entire system. My only comment is we don't decide who's part time. That's their choice. Number one. Number two, you can't have a system that only has 15% full time people and not have the part timers paying part of the share. I mean, it just, the system wouldn't exist. Anything else on long range?
No.
Thank you.
Well, other than just the point of the adding the sample size, really kind of made this clear that we weren't just looking at a small skew of the system.
Sure.
So there was a huge fact that it cost a little bit of money at the time, but it gives a good look at what we brought.
It's an incredible piece of work. Thank you. Interim financing waiver.
John, you want to talk to that?
We wrote a letter to USDA to see if you could get a waiver of the interim financing. And just so you know, Frank's no longer with the USDA. Frank Rizzo, who was our contact. There's another staff person that is really not familiar as much as Frank was with the program. So it's a little difficult to communicate. So I'm in communication with the state director, Pete Ibera, directly. And I had a conference call with me, him, and Dave to go over interim financing. And I'm on record, but I'll say he basically told us that he thinks it's going to be very difficult to waive that interim financing requirement. For the reason being that he expedited our loan to get approval before the end of the year to try to work with the national office. They were able to push that thing through the national offices within 30 days. One of the conditions of the national office is that we have to go by the provisions, which requires interim financing from an outside source. So Pete doesn't think he has a good shot at all of trying to eliminate the interim financing requirement. He did give me a list, and you, I think already, Mike, you've already contacted a couple. One's CoBank, but he says they work real well with some of the other agencies that he knows about. So there are some banks that we may want to start talking seriously with. Well, my recommendation, Mike,
let's jump in there real quick. There's a couple of things there that are really frustrating, because one is when we agreed to that letter of conditions, we asked about this interim financing requirement, and the response that we got from Frank was, oh, don't worry about it. It's always in there, and we get it waived. I've never had to do it. He said, I've never worked on a project
where they've been required to actually do the interim financing, you'll get a waiver, don't worry about it. That was the response that we got. It was never presented to us as we're expediting this on the condition that you comply with this interim financing requirement. That is brand new information and really frustrating, because we have contacted, I don't know, how many, five different?
At least five.
And some of them, initially we found two or three on our own, and we contacted lenders that said, we don't have a product for you. And we went to USDA with that information and requested the waiver. And they came back to us and said, oh, contact these other two lenders, you'll get what you want. And one of them doesn't even have an interim lending program. And the other one, all of them have said, it doesn't make sense for you to do this. Even the lenders are telling us, we don't have a product that's going to work for you. And so for USDA to then say, sorry, we're not going to waive that requirement, it is just, I mean, it's just unbelievable. So what I think is hopefully going to happen, and we don't know yet because they're taking their time to, you know, work through this. What I suspect has happened is before that call, the new person who's involved in this did not really have time to look at the information that we provided from the lenders and you know, really determine that it's just not an option for us, even if we wanted it to be. And hopefully that's what they're doing right now, and they said they're going to look at that stuff and they'll come back to us and grant a waiver. I don't know. But if they don't, we can't even find a lender that'll do it for us yet. Or if we do, it's going to be on worse terms than what USDA had offered us.
Yeah. Do we need to gin up our local Congress folks to get on board with us in this?
And I've done that. And I think maybe that's some. I think, Mike, you and I probably should get on the phone with Pete Ibarra first and go over our concerns with him on a conference call. And yes, I would highly recommend we go to a congressman, mm-hmm. because it's some that's waivable. A congressman can easily make that decision, and I've had that happen.
Well, the congressman can't make the decision, but the congressman can
put pressure on somebody.
Yeah, he can
that's
what
I mean. Right.
So we can, we can go that route. Although,
what's his name is a real friend of ours, in this community.
Made a hell of an impression, didn't he?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Olivera.
Oh, Michael.
He's not going to have any influence on the USDA, though. We would go to McClintock.
He's tight with McClintock.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And that I see. Yeah.
But before we take that route, you're going to try and work something out.
At that point, we will also have to look at how hard we want to fight this, because it's not a deal killer. It's an extra step, according to Frank.
It's a lost revenue.
Even if we have to do it, it's not going to cause us a whole lot of headache. It may cost a little bit more in the short term, but at the end of the construction, the loan turns over to USDA anyways, and we go from there. So there isn't it's not like this is going to kill the project, and so we have to, we'll just have to evaluate whether we really want to go to the mat on this issue or not. But we're gonna push back as hard as we can, at least initially.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And it'd be interesting to find out what, you and I talking to Pete together as to what the pressure is on him to force us to do it. I think that's an important point.
How much money are you talking?
I don't have a dollar amount.
We had like approximately $100,000 of potential interest loss revenue. It could be used for pipelines, it now won't be.
So we have a plan. The plan is that you guys are going to work together to resolve this. All right. Thank you. Any questions of the board on the interim financing waiver issue? Hearing none, anyone in the audience? Thank you. Items two is taken care of. Item three is, I'll defer that. Item two again, MC Engineering.
Oh, nice.
MC Engineering progress report by John Pedry.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me just say there's multiple fronts that we have on this project, and by that I mean we have separate teams working on separate things. One would be the meter locates, and as you know, we got those done, and it's quite an effort by Rich and Jose and some other staff members working with us to go out to each individual lot and look at each of the locations.
It also involved me going out with them in some areas and looking at where the water main's going to be on which side of the street, because that has some play into it. But they put a very, I would say, a very good effort forward to locate each of the potential meter sites. Put the forms together. We've had a few that there are some things that may be a little off on the picture, but other than that, I think pretty much we've had a pretty good response on the forms that we sent to the customer. We'll find out today, I guess, at the workshop, how many people show up with a form. But I think, Dave, you've been getting phone calls on those forms, and you've been working with Rick in terms of how we can correct where that meter goes. Why that's important, those meter locations really had to be done ahead of the line being put in the final drawings, and that is I need to have services showing on the drawings. And I can't show house services for the contractor until I get every one of those meter locates in place.
Does everybody know Rick?
No, I haven't.
I've been here. I was here at the original one.
Yeah. Rick's a mechanical engineer working for our company. And he's also, just so you know, I'll just say, he's had other water meter projects. Very, very educated in meter installation. Has a good understanding of construction. And Rick, why don't you just tell some of the projects you've worked on here recently and you're working on?
We do... We manage Hillsboro, San Bruno, Livermore, and we have a big one down in Western Municipal. So while a lot of those are not, the service lines being put in and stuff, it's the whole meter installation and the activating of the meters and even managing the data and stuff of those different projects.
Welcome.
So, yeah.
So that's been real good, and I think we're real happy. I'm real happy with what I'm seeing out in the field. We've had to relocate a few of the meter boxes and working with And Billy and David are just exemplary in terms of working with us, proactive, on the spot. And I don't usually see that with other agencies. And they've been just a wealth of information. Billy will see something out there where a meter box states in the wrong location, let us know. So he worked real well with the team out in the field. So it was a very concerted effort and a lot of time put into it, but I think it was done well. Now, again, we'll find out in the day to day how well it was. But I think overall, pretty good. So that's the one front. I think that's a major front because it involves the customer. It involves the relocate of his meter from the back to the front. The second front is putting the main together. And I have pretty much 50% drawings here. There's a few I'm missing that I'm still working on. And the 50% drawings that we have include the meter locations. It includes the services and the water line. Let me explain. The water line hasn't been, it's been fairly easy because we have pretty much a clean canvas in terms of where we put that water main. I'm used to projects where you have sewer in the ground, you have dry utilities, undergrounds, things above ground, and you have a few culverts, so it's a pretty clean canvas. But the issue is, it's very expensive when we start dealing with Calaveras County roads. And if we have to put the pipeline within the road because we have other water lines or other issues or very narrow shoulders, then the cost would go up. So I've been working real closely with Calaveras County to verify my specs, my standards. We even had a person come to the field. So everything we've done has been really walked every line to try to help keep this thing on the shoulder, because the difference in cost is $10 to $15 a linear foot if you're in the street. So there is a significant cost increase by being in the street. So we're trying to put them in the shoulder as best we can. We even, Dave and I, met with a contractor that I knew, a pretty big one that's done work of this size all over. I drove around with him and just said, I got some narrow shoulders, some steep banks. Can we put the water line in the shoulder? I just want to get some feedback, whether it's feasible. We got some excellent feedback. I worked with him for a couple hours just verifying locations of things. Another contractor that I told him, what do you think about my price per foot, my footage cost? He's pretty much spot on in terms of my cost breakdown. So we feel pretty comfortable where the mains are. So that's going pretty good. Our goal is to have...
Let me interject a point of view. In my sense is you're probably not sensitive to this. But I think, as a member, as a resident in Blue Lake Springs, I am very concerned at the rate at which our streets are deteriorating, even before you put a trench somewhere. So I think it behooves us to ask you to, in as far as possible, locate, you know, these mains out of the street so that more damage is not done to an already deplorable situation.
Yeah, and when we're doing that, we would take it one step farther. Just last week we had our Geotech has a camera, and as a part of our contract with him, he went out and videotaped, and Rick, you're working with him, all the roadways with a high-definition camera.
Yeah, it's kind of like Google Street View Maps, but on steroids. So it's really cool. And then we can actually look, we can actually
pan.
I think it keeps it about 4 feet off the ground. We can actually pan down, look at the roadways.
Wow. And the cracks, you can actually, really, you can see every crack.
Yeah,
wow. It shows
you
up
can read stuff on people's doors.
Wow.
Ourselves were there before we did it.
Right.
Yeah, and we know this, and that's a great combination.
And we can also see what the roads look like as we're, you know, as John's designing where these pipes are going.
And we're seeing significant deterioration because of all the logging work that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of heavy equipment. So one of the requirements.
Trucks will beat up your roads.
Right. One of the requirements we're going to request is we could, in the contract, we've got to be careful about it because it may change the bid structure a little bit, but, you know, you can ask for certain types of equipment, 1,500 pound, 15,000 pound machines, whatever. Backhoes, but you want to keep away from heavy duty stuff. We want rubberized tracks if we can. So those are things we're going to have to write in, and I've already made notes into the specs to let the contractor know there'll be certain limitations, but we got to be careful we don't restrict them. There are some rock areas, just I want to throw that out, that we've had the Geotech report done that's going to require some heavy equipment. My concern there is, based on the type of equipment, we may hurt the roadway. And part of that's on Patricia, some of those areas up in that southwest area. So I even had the Geotech go back and redefine a little bit better the rock areas. And I'll let you know, TNS Construction, who just did the project that's out here in front, they told me they didn't make any money, lost a lot of money on it. I says, why is that? Because they didn't define the rock locations. And we hit a lot of rock. And it hurt my pocket and hurt the county's pocket. So I think rock locations are another thing that I'm really trying to focus in on. And that includes some of the services, and I don't know, some of those meter boxes, when you look at a bank of rock and you're saying, you're going to put a meter up here above that bank of rock, we're going to have to work through some of those. And some of those will cause trenching, and Mazingo, one of the contractors, saw it very easily, he could trench through that, but he would recommend that we would put in a kind of a slurry or concrete trench backfill. And so we're going to look at that in the specs. So I got some special provisions there. So overall, we're a little, I say a little behind schedule on the 80s, 90s by, I think we had April or November 15th. We're probably looking right around the first week in December to have these drawings. But I need to get more input from him in terms of meter locations for services. But we're pretty much on track on the drawings. The other element, the other big ticket item, is the PRVs locations, and I'm working on those now, pressure reducing stations. You have PRVs located in the back of lots now, all over the place. So now we're going to put them in the street. And those vaults are 6 to 8, 6 to 9 feet. And if you put them in the roadway or near it, you have to traffic approved lids, it can be very expensive. So how we locate those and where, and we're limited based on elevations, because they're set up to be put in where we have a high pressure, low pressure going to a high pressure, then reducing it back down to low pressure, run it down to another high pressure, another PRV. So you have some room to work with. So I'm currently locating those PRVs so they're out of the roadway, but most of them, there'll be a few in the roadway, which makes it difficult for Dave and team to go in and try to adjust to without flagging and controls. But we're looking at that. So that's one that's going very well. I'll survey out here next week, surveying those locations for me so I can spot them straight on. The other big ticket item is the booster pump station, which is currently in design. And we're going to end up probably going with a dual pump. You can remove, once it's in, you remove the dual pump, and you have a backup, so you can run one pump. So they're going to have the booster station, which takes water near the Cypress Point area and pumps it up to tank 6. And that's, it gives us the ability to bring CCWD water and blend it into the system, or if there's an emergency, you need to fill tank 6. If your plant goes down, your pump station, you can bring water from CCWD into that booster station and get it up to tank 6, so now you can pretty much serve the whole area. So that booster station is really critical in the modeling that we looked at. So we're in the process of putting layouts together. I should have some drawings to Billy and Dave within about a week that you can start looking at the layout.
One element of that, and I'm going to say...
Let me ask a question that comes to mind. Sorry to keep interrupting, but going back to our earlier budget discussion, if perchance, you know, we find ourselves running, you know, over budget and need to, you know, catch up and stay within the confines of the $12 million, is something like that booster pump station deferrable?
Yes. Yeah, it's a good call. But as the deputy did alternate added, as I don't mind, it's probably done. We just did one in Clear Lake Oaks, California. We had a whole list of wish list projects. And so we have a base bid with a contractor's bid, and we award bid based on the base bid, low bidder. And then you have a list of projects you prioritize. And so that whoever the contractor is, okay, he's the one we're going to pick. But then you go down and look at his alternates that he put prices on, like the booster station. Now, the only problem with doing that is that this low bidder that wasn't low on the base bid may be lower on the booster. You don't get his bid. You're going to have to stick with the low base bidder. But yeah, we will have bid alternates. Booster station's one of them. I think there's another element to this I was going to get to. That booster station is currently pumping through an AC asbestos concrete pipe that runs. I mean, I walked 1,000 feet of it. I'm appalled at the fact that it's even lasted this long. But it runs behind the subdivision to get up the tank six. So and the problem with it is running through trees and rocks, and it's probably out of the easement in some locations. So we looked at the modeling and laid out, and I walked in with Billy and Dave, where we can run 1,000 feet of new pipe from that booster station to get into a Wawona Street. And in Wawona, we would go into an existing trench of an existing new line and throw this booster line into that same trench, follow Wawona until we get to the upper zone. And what that does is allow us to pump in up to the upper zone that gives us the tank six. It's maybe 1,800 to 2,000 feet of additional pipeline. So it's a potential extra. It's another wish list project. I like the idea of having it as a part of the booster station. I think it's important. And then there's another element of this project, talking about extras, that we found was that when we did the modeling, it showed two main lines going up NOLA. And there's only one between... what street is that? It's connecting to Dean, I think.
Maryland?
No, Dorothy. Yeah, it's Maryland. No, it's NOLA, but it's...
Alien.
And what's the next street up? There's a cutoff. What?
Gloria.
Gloria. So from Gloria down to Dean, there was a missing pipe in the master plan. So we need to add a 6-inch main. It's about 1,200 feet or so. So that's an additional cost. Now, that really isn't a wish list. That's something you need to throw into this. Now, what's that? Look at the mods going, why are there two pipes here? And so we ran the models, two pipes kept showing up, and then sure enough, it was on the other model that we had from LS. So it is a pipe that needs to be thrown in. Long story short, we may have some additional overruns. Now, how can we, there's ways, I think this budget's going to work, the way we have it, 9.7 million construction. There is an existing 6-inch main, and during the model, that runs down from the plant all the way up, down Blue Lake Springs, down to Moran, and then up Rainy. It connects, used to connect to Tank 4, and that would bring water from the plant up to Tank 4, an independent line. Well, now that you have CCWD connected, and you've got another source of water that's permanent with your agreement, that line now is a usable line. Well, believe it or not, the project has a new line coming from the plant running down Blue Lake Springs, down Moran, and up Rainy. If we could use that line, we could save between $300,000 to $500,000. It would make up the difference for these extras. So I had Billy go out and give me some pictures of what the condition of that pipe is. And I think it was put in 20 years ago, Dave? It's 15, 20?
Yeah.
And it's class 200. So you give me a picture of the thickness, and I looked it up, and it's a class 200 PVC polymonochloride. It's a great pipe. So I think we can use it. I think we save a ton of money. And that means not having to tear up more than half of the Blue Lake Springs Drive and a good part of Moran and even Rainy. So those are the busiest streets. So it's potential savings. So we're adding that. It's not a lot of, it's really not extra to me other than I need to put services on it. So those are the big ticket items. We're pretty much on schedule. We have a draft of the specs. Our goal within 2 weeks is to have a set of generals to you, Mike, to look at, so you can look at all the USDA provisions and stuff, and you've been through that, so we'll go through that. We have some templates that we've used in other projects. And then the spec part of the specifications, the technical specs, we're putting those together currently. So other than that, it's going good. A little, like I said, I think we're still on schedule, easily on schedule to meet the bid date. And it's going pretty good, not so far. Go ahead.
So when will we see the drawings and the technical specifications and the general specification?
I have 2 days. I have 12-1. I could have the 50%. I say the 50, it would be more like 80s. We should have them ready by the first week in December. So, because these really meet the fulfillment needs of an 80% or 90% design. Yeah, I said 90, I said 80, and the eyes are bad. Yeah. So without saying the 50s.
Yeah, so they'll be more.
And then we have 90s in terms of where we kind of are now. We have 90% plans, specs, and drawings by the end of December, and we should easily meet that date. So I believe we're on schedule. And we're on schedule, I believe, to even meet the bid schedule. Unless something comes up, there's nothing that I see that's going to change this. I think I was going to put a rough processing together, but based on the nuances and all the changes I'm saying, I'm not going to touch that at this point until I get some of these issues resolved. There's another, just so you know, there's other cost savings that we're seeing based on original estimate. And one is that how many single services that we have in the original budget?
We had 250.
250 singles. We were able to limit that to about 50 single services, so everything's a double. And we're saving $1,500 a service there. So there's some savings. So I'm trying to avoid this wish list idea, but if we have to, we'll have deductive additives or deductive. So.
John, thank you. If the board would indulge me here a moment, there's a gentleman in the back that came in late. Sir, you represent the audience, and thank you for coming. Did you want to discuss anything that's not on the agenda?
No, I just came to hear the how you're putting together the plan for changing the water system over for Blue Lake Springs, and I'm on Merlin Road, and so I would prefer not having to. I mean, how are you going to address if I have to, and I'm not the only one who has to relocate their water system or reconnect on the other side of Marine Road? I mean, how is that being costed? And then also, in the discussion that came up, that it sounds like it's going to end up like the tree project that was done up in Blue Lake Springs, where it's up to the homeowners to contract to get our water reconnected to the main that's being put in. And how is that going to be synchronized so that we're not out of water for weeks and months as we're waiting for to be reconnected? I mean, how is that going to be coordinated so that as we're disconnected, we're reconnected as quickly as possible? And at a minimum cost, I mean, how are we going to be charged for this when it was brought up earlier in the conversation that we would have to contract with a plumber? Not every plumber has the equipment to do the job. So, I mean, how is all that going to be straightened out so it's like a minimum of disruption in our lives?
It's the issue who's going to pay for all of this. We're working on that, and it's our goal that the water company will reimburse the homeowner for the expenses.
He's wanting to know if he's going to get water.
One second.
We can answer that.
That's the first part. Yeah. The other part about how long it will take and how long your water service will be shut, I'll leave that up to those that do the work.
The pipe will be put in. Your service will be in. The pipe will be disinfected. After it's disinfected, then clean water will be in the pipe. Then you will be notified to hook up to the new box. So there will be, except for the time that you're disconnected from the old one by the plumber, and he's running the new line, and that's the only time he'll be out of water. He won't be out of water for months or weeks or anything like that. And the exact timing of that is unknown yet, because we don't have a contract with the installer of the pipeline. We plan to do it, because it's such a big project, we plan to do it in sections, or we might do, part of Moran Road in one section, and then we'll heat that up, we'll get it ready for hookups, and then the customer would be hooking up, because the services will be in, pipe will be disinfected, clean water in it. It'll still be connected in the back, because we're going to keep the old lines hot still. So you'll have water back there, you'll have water in the front. All of the time you're going to be out of water only is during your movement of your service from your house to the new water service box.
Okay. And the timing may be spelled out. We can't direct the contractor what to do, but we're going to give him some sequencing. Another thing that TNS told me about the CCWD water line that went in, they said that one of the problems they had was the time and the scheduling of disinfection. They lost a lot of money trying to follow a certain procedure. So the less we can put on the contractor, let them get the project done, get it all in, get it disinfected, boom, now we can get everybody connected. I'm kind of leaning towards that, which means you're not going to see meters installed for a little longer in some cases. But that would make the project a little bit easier for everybody. And they can be still served off the old system, right, Billy? And Billy and I have been talking about ways of jumping lines. And so they can still be served off the old system until we get that line disinfected and tested and pressure tested. And then people can start connecting. It'd be nice to do it all at one time if we can.
But we're going to do our best to keep both pipes hot as long as possible until the deadline's been given. Yeah. And then we can kill the lines.
So you'll be dealing with failures and
breaks,
yeah,
like you do now, so it's a problem.
That's how it's always been done in the past.
Okay, sir, did you get your questions answered?
Pardon?
You get your questions answered?
Yes, thank you.
Okay,
very much.
Okay. Item next is the selection of an auditor. We sent out, asked for bids, got two back. There's a note dated November 2017. Two firms that are competing for the audit for the company. I made a recommendation from the board as to who to go with, if we're going to go with one of these two.
It's in the September packet.
September.
We looked at the two.
It's on page 37.
It's on this one, too.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
It's the same as the September packet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a summary of how much it's worth. 37.
Page 37 on your package.
Keep going. Oh, here.
The board have it up in front of them. Need a recommendation from the board as to which company to go with.
Well, do we have any experience with either of these?
We don't. We've never used an auditor before. Well, that's not true.
He's
an auditor out of Sonora.
What have we done to vet either of these?
Just submitted their littles to you last 2 months ago.
So
we talked to both of them. Did you talk to both of them on the phone, Lee?
Yes.
We seem to prefer Atherton and Associates. They had if you look at your September packet, they had a larger, it's not a proposal, but they seemed to be more detailed, and had a more interest in us than the other firm. I believe the other firm just sent an email that said this is what our cost would be to you. So Atherton seemed more interested in our business, basically.
So Lee, have you gotten involved at all with either vetting these?
No, and I'm sort of torn because I'm seriously thinking about abstaining, because they're essentially coming in to audit what would be perceived as my work, and so I'm not sure I should be involved in the selection of the auditor.
You familiar
from
with
a legal company? Perspective, I don't have a problem with you, because participating, because you're doing the bulk of the work, but everybody's reviewing it, the board is approving it, staff's got input on it. It's not, you know, you don't need to be in on it. But if you want to be very cautious and eliminate any perception of control over the auditor, then yeah, you can abstain. I don't have a strong feeling on it.
Well, chief financial officers of public companies get involved in selecting the auditing firms all the time, so I personally would just feel a bit more comfortable if our chief financial officer, Lee Bateman, has, I don't want to say skin in the game, but, a point of view as it relates to...
Okay, all right.
Reviewing emails is not vetting
what your concern is, but I don't see it.
Okay. Then, I would agree, I think, with Dave that Atherton is the...
That's my recommendation. Based on
they also finished their thing by February. The other one won't have it in until April. If it's to our benefit to have the audit in early.
Recommendation of staff is for
Atherton and Associates.
Pleasure of the board.
That's fine. We need a vote.
Do we need a motion?
Yes. To open a contract.
I move that we open a contract with Atherton.
I'll second that.
On the question, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed, say nay. Any abstentions?
Aye.
No. Abstaining is not a...
Well, whatever it is, Bob.
I abstain. That's okay. Correspondence. I prefer we don't use the person's name.
Okay.
Publicly. You have a letter and a series of emails from a customer.
What is our hard stop time today?
I'm sorry?
What is our hard stop time today?
12 o'clock.
12 o'clock. We have something to eat for you, and we should be, I hope, through everything here within the next 20 minutes.
Okay, are we going to get into executive session?
Yes.
In the next 20 minutes?
Yes, because we have salaries to discuss.
Yeah, I think it's more than a 20-minute discussion, though.
Well, we have until 1 o'clock, so...
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I meant by hard stop.
Oh, okay. No, we want to get out of here by 12:45. The town hall starts at 1 o'clock. Okay. My mistake. Okay, the correspondence matter is from a gentleman who is asking us to waive... In fact, he's telling us to grant a waiver for a late fee. You have the material in front of you. He says he can't pay his bills because he's busy doing other things.
I have an answer.
Does it start with F?
He's a hard money lender, this person.
He's a what?
Hard money lender.
Does the board need to formally act on this? To approve or disapprove his
motion would be good. I think the standard practice in the industry is not to grant that type of waiver, and that's been our past practice as well.
No, I understand, but we're talking about board action. Then I'll move that the board deny, that's it, this little firm, if somebody could find a better word, deny the request.
Yeah.
Second that.
On the question, all in favor of denial, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. And there are no abstentions. I counted.
Okay.
So what is the word for abstaining?
I abstain. Aye or nay is considered is a vote. Coughing spasms included.
Sorry about that. I'll remember next time.
I need a motion from the board to appoint Andy to the long-range planning committee.
So moved.
I make a motion.
I'll second the motion.
Okay. All those
so
in favor.
So did
I. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed say nay.
Andy, are you abstaining?
We have, Dave has conducted interviews of interested parties for the board of directors as directed. And his recommendation is to appoint
Jay Brethauer.
Did you talk a little bit about him?
He we, Paul and I met with Jay. He seems very intelligent. He's interested in the board and interested in, he had some questions for us. I ran down kind of where we are as a company, what we're doing with our project and the various issues that are kind of coming before the board and kind of what, you know, he'll be thinking about.
Yeah. He had a bunch of questions for us and we answered them. I think it'll be a good match.
Good fit. Okay. Yeah, and the understanding he's fulfilling a vacant position until the vacancy expires.
Yes.
Right. Until the position expires. Okay.
Right.
Which is how long?
A year and a half.
2019.
Yeah.
Okay. Entertain a motion to accept the recommendation of staff.
So moved.
Second by?
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Thank you.
What's his name?
Item D have to do with, I think you're all aware of these. There are a half a dozen or I forget. Very small parcels now being sold by the Homeowners Association. According to our rules and our bylaws, anyone who buys one of these now becomes a member of the water company, even though there's no water service to these parcels. And for every person that buys one of the parcels, they get a vote. The question that we have, the HOA is seeking, is what are we going to charge these new property owners to belong to the water company, if anything? My personal recommendation, we don't charge them anything.
Why?
There's no service demand on the property. There's no water service. The piece of property is probably the size of a standard, about half the size of a standard 18-foot driveway. They're very small.
So people are buying these lots to...
so they can get membership in the HOA.
Right.
Are these part of the 2026
no.
lots?
No.
No, we'd be creating new members.
New members.
So these would be new shareholders in the mutual water company.
I would think they wouldn't be shareholders if they're not paying anything. Yeah.
They would be subject to a different rate because we were basically adding a new category of ratepayer. And the board can set the rate at whatever rate they want it to be, even zero. One of the things to take into consideration is under our current articles of incorporation, all shareholders are voting members. So we can amend the articles to create non-voting shareholders, or we can keep them as voting members, but it's just one of the things to throw into consideration.
Are these buildable lots?
No. The one that's in one of them that's in escrow right now, the description we got is it's the size of two trash cans.
No.
There's no way these lots will ever be built on.
If we amend the articles, does that take a vote of the shareholders?
Yes.
There is a cost, we do incur a cost by opening an account with their names on it. And they would then be noticed by the water company every time we sent out a general mailing. If we want to recover those costs, that would be about $15 a year. Yes, sir.
It's not a matter of accepting these lots, correct? I mean, our articles of incorporation, once they are established as a lot inside the definition, they are automatically a member, correct?
A new share would be created, and under the current rate structure, I think it would just be considered an unimproved lot.
Correct, but it's not as if we have a choice of whether to accept them or not.
No.
They are in fact, and they will have a vote.
The issue is, if we're going to charge them, how much
will charge a fee
for an empty lot? The empty lot fee right now, which is the only thing that would apply under our rules, is about $480 a year.
Right.
Now this thing is just it's about as width of this table if it's that wide, Tom.
So I think these new lots would be more comparable to the combined lots, which are the lots that people own in conjunction with another lot that are not buildable and will not be supplied any water. Whereas an unimproved lot could eventually get water and be buildable. And the rate for the combined lot is like $48. I just want to throw that out.
So yeah, I think 48, it's 10%, I think it's 10% of the unimproved lot rate.
Yeah.
I think that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, which is about 48 lot. So the question is, do we charge the new property owner this little sliver, which again has no water service on it, nor will it? They're non-buildable lots. Yes, sir.
The one reason I bring that up is if they come in and we don't charge them anything and they're very comparable to a combined lot, are the combined lot people going to start complaining?
I was just going to go there. And there's also a fairly significant lawsuit going on the HOA side, which, you know, takes this whole thing into consideration. So, you know, my sense is we need to be consistent. So if, you know, we have a policy in place today where combined lots, you know, the second portion of that lot's being charged 10% of whatever that number is, that we apply that same number to these guys.
Yeah.
$48 a year is,
I have 118 with the combined lot rate. Does that not sound right, Tom?
Was it 20% or 25%?
Maybe it's 25%.
25%.
Yeah.
Okay. So 118.
Well, but still even $118 a year.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, they are.
Otherwise, we open ourselves up legally, I think, you know, to Tom's point, you know, around, well, you're giving it to them for nothing.
Oh, yeah, 25% of lot charge.
Yeah, that makes sense. And there is some value, obviously, that there's some administrative cost to us, the existence of these shares, and they are receiving value from the fact that the water system exists. There's no subdivision without it.
Yeah, so, they can use snowflake lot.
Yeah. So they are receiving a value, and we are incurring a little bit of a cost. I think that was the same rationale that we used when we developed the rate for the combined lot share.
Well, the combined lots and the unimproved lots have water service.
They have one water service.
Right. Yeah. These will not have any water service.
No.
That's probably the dramatic difference.
Well, but the combined lot is paying a full connection rate for their first share, and then they're also paying for the second share.
Right.
The combined lot rate.
And we're obligated to maintain that, but there's no obligation to us on these because there won't be. None of our product will be there.
Well, right, but the combined lot rate that they're paying on that second share doesn't have anything to do with the water service we're paying for, or that they're receiving.
That's correct, but we're still obligated to have it there.
Right, but they're paying for that under the
right share. And maintain it.
Right.
On these lots,
two votes,
and they get two votes.
Yeah. Right. On these lots, there's no service of any kind, so we have no expense to maintain it. The only expense that we will have is notifying the property owners.
Yes, but I'm just pointing out that we don't have an expense on the second share on the combined lots either.
Good point.
That expense is separate.
Yeah, we don't put a meter.
We don't have a physical expense. We still have a little bit of administrative expense.
Okay. So the question of the hour is, what are we going to charge these folks?
118.
Gosh.
I know, but and.
Well. Well, what's the right?
There's another option.
Management. Do you have a point of view?
My point of view is not to charge them anything.
Oh.
Not to do anything with them because we'll never have a service there. No services, that they're not paying for any services from us. Because they're a shareholder, they have a vote. I say most of the shareholders in this place don't vote anyway. And the amount of those lots
isn't going to change.
It's not going to change a thing.
And one thing to add another option is, and because I agree that consistency is important, but you can change the combined lot rate at the same time if you want it to be zero.
You could change it right now. We could change it at the next meeting.
Well, the combined lot was a buildable lot. They just have to use
it. Not necessarily. Not in every case. No.
Well, in the sense of the property owner decided to use two lots to build a structure.
Right.
Okay.
But they can't get a second water service.
Right.
Second
right. That's true. Right. But these are not buildable at all.
These things are just little slivers of property.
No, they can't get a second one if it was to that lot.
Right.
What if I own a lot and I can come in here and prove to the board, I own a regular lot, that it is unbuildable?
Yeah.
It's a big lot. Big lot, but it's unbuildable.
Well, there are going to be a few of those under the new construction laws in California.
Right. Yeah. Are we going to move, are we going to say they go to zero?
We deferred that. That was to be discussed today.
Well, the reason that we're thinking about not charging these folks is because they are unbuildable lots. That principle going to apply to all unbuildable lots in the division?
It's not just that they're unbuildable, it's that they will not have anything to do with the water company. We aren't providing them no service. The only service we might provide them is fire protection for that little bitty lot.
No, I understand, and I
unbuildable lot.
I understand your point, though that changes over time, because there are lots that used to be considered unbuildable and have houses.
I had two lots, one on either side of me, that said were not buildable.
These two.
There's two big houses there now.
Right,
but
right.
These, like, you couldn't put a septic system on them. Room for that.
Could you bring an RV in and back it onto the property and hook up to a hose bin?
Yeah.
It'd have to be a small RV and have to park it sideways.
Water.
I don't know.
The distinction we make here should be based perhaps on the size
of
the lot, not that it is unbuildable. Because the size of the lot, nobody else can come in and claim they have a tiny lot, but people can come in and allege that it's unbuildable.
Or one other distinction that you could use is, my understanding, Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, Lee.
Yes,
okay.
Is
that there's actually language in the deeds for these parcels that say they will never be improved.
I can't say to that because we have not seen the deeds yet, because the escrow is not completed.
That was my understanding, but we can confirm
that. That's what we heard from the homeowners.
Okay, right. So confirm what's in the deed.
So, and if that's the case, because these other lots that may or may not be unbuildable, you know, as time goes on, if there's language in the deed that says it will never be built on.
That's a definition right there.
Yeah.
I would move that we accept these lots and charge them the $15 annual fee.
Lee?
If I could bump that to 25?
We charge them a $25 annual fee.
Second.
There you go. Good.
On the question, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Thank you. We'd like to go to executive session. So.
And just on the consistency point, because I still think that's
important. See you later. Joe, thanks.
We get that question today. Maybe we just say that we have postponed that discussion to a future board meeting.
You know what? I was probably won't be.